You are about to opt in to Monerotopia, a show for the Monero community where all are welcome to join. From noob to maxi, no matter what bags you hold. Just sit back and relax to the sweet sounds of Monero's latest progress. Or if you're feeling inspired, join us on stage. Remember, the only thing that can stop Monero is a false belief that it can be stopped. And if you want to win the revolution faster, we recommend you remove your XMR from all custodial exchanges immediately. Warning, voting accidents are common around here. Don't forget to properly secure your private keys. Monerotopia starts now.
Alrighty, Tux, morning. How's
good morning. It's going.
What happened? Are we good? Are we okay?
I didn't mute my mic.
Okay, all right. What's up? What's new?
We got lots of Monero stuff this week. A lot of Monero stuff. Monero's been crazy.
I know. You sound distracted.
Oh, I'm like managing other stuff in the background.
Yeah, Matt. So did you end up seeing the eclipse?
I saw part of it. About 80, like 80 something percent from where I was. But I mean, I could still tell it was an eclipse with the glasses, which is pretty cool. And it was oddly, it was kind of like eerily dim outside. It wasn't pitch black like it is with total, but it was like broad daylight, yet 50% dimmer. It was really weird because like where I was at, it was perfectly clear skies. It was pretty beautiful. But it was kind of weird. It was like less light.
Yeah, you just we got it, man. We ended up in Vermont. It's like right on the border of Canada, and we had clear skies. We got like 4 minutes. Oh, people. All right. I'll make it a little louder here with gain. That should be good now. I hope.
Yep, cool. It does sound good.
But yeah, it was really cool. It was really cool. When it went dark, it wasn't completely dark. But you were able to obviously take off your glasses at that point. Oh, by the way, we used that obsidian disc that we got from Mexico.
Oh, you did? Did it work?
It worked really well, better than the glasses. So I was able to just wear my normal eyeglasses so I could see distance better. And I was just holding up the obsidian disc and it really amplified it. It was beautiful.
That's cool. You didn't go blind.
And I didn't go blind. Yeah, as far as I know, no side effects.
So that
was really cool. And then yeah, when it went dark, we took pictures, but it just doesn't capture it because the picture shows like a big glowing ball around a little dot, and it was the opposite. It was a large black circle. And then just like a thin little silver glowing line around the outside. And the stars were out. It was completely dark. But just as you looked out into the horizon, you could see light. Almost kind of like it felt like, you know, the sun had set maybe like a half hour ago. And if you're looking out on the horizon, you still see some light. But it was amazing. And then I think like the most exciting part was when it transitioned back and it started to move back a little bit. And even like just like when 1% of the sun like came out, like everything just like lit up.
It all came back
straight from like from black to light, like instantly.
Yeah, even 99% and 100% was like just totally different.
So yeah. I could definitely see being totally, because you can't even look at it directly, right? When it goes black, I was looking up upcoming solar eclipse, and interesting one. 3 years from now, that's going to go across Egypt, and they're going to get like a 6 minute total blackout.
Wow.
And it's going to go right over, you know, the ruins. I mean, that sounds pretty amazing. So maybe we have Monerotopia. We plan Monerotopia around an eclipse. Get your Monero eclipse glasses.
That'd be exciting. That'd be a little hard. It would probably be a lot of work, and a lot of like forest location just for the eclipse.
It wouldn't be that hard. Just Egypt, 2020, whatever. It's 3 years from now, I think. Yeah, 2027.
Okay, yeah. I mean, you have three years of time. There you go.
And you have pretty good guaranteed weather. I mean, you're in a desert, right? So you're going to get clear skies. Yeah. And the 6 minute, it's going to be a 6 minute blackout. I don't know.
That's pretty long.
Yeah. All right. Let's get it moving. Enough about the small talk eclipse stuff, although I love that stuff as you. But yeah, let's keep it moving. We got a big show today. No special guests, but I'm sure This will be a long one as usual. I know there's a lot of news, as you said, Tux. A lot of things going on in Monero. It's becoming hard to keep up.
Tons of development
going on the research side of things. Anybody who's been paying attention to the forums there, we had Luke Parker on last week, and that was an amazing rundown he gave to all of us on what he's looking to do with regards to implementing full membership proofs before Seraphis. It's no longer theoretical. It's coming into action. We'll see if he could actually achieve what he's setting out to do. Ultimately, it's the math that's going to decide whether or not that's possible, right? So, there's going to be some research involved. It's not certainty yet that this can be done. But they're going to give it a go, and it seems highly likely that it will be capable of being done. Is at least my assessment from what Lucas said and what I've been reading. And as part of that, they're obviously raising funds to accomplish this. So there was a CCS that was put out, by CypherStack that has already been fully funded. They're basically going to be reviewing, generalized bulletproofs. That's already funded. That project's going to begin. And then Luke Parker put out his, very large CCS, well deserved. Once that's funded, again, work on that. So extremely excited. I'm sure we'll go into more detail on this in the news section. We could bring up his, funding requests, review it, go over it, and we could all chip in and be a part of history, help get it done as quickly as possible.
Uploading that one right now.
Yeah, extremely exciting to see the progress that's being made. Obviously a lot of people involved in this, but Luke has, he's doing amazing things. Not just his abilities to actually do the math, but his creative ability in coming up with these solutions and seeing them. And perhaps even more impressive, his ability to take action and push things forward and with great speed, and precision, right? I mean, he's really, extremely talented person. And what I find most bullish about it is somebody like Luke has decided to devote himself to the Monero project and be a phenom anywhere he chooses to be. He is very interested in Monero, the project, and he is, he's putting his heart and soul into it, and he's taking it to the next level. Extremely exciting times, I'd say, right now, Monero.
Yeah, go upvote read it, of course. And then if you agree with the proposal, you can upvote it on the GitLab.
Yeah, he's asking for 3,000 Monero, which is a lot of Monero, guys.
Well, but this is some pretty crazy work that's going on.
There's a ton of work. And if you look at it for his own personal take off the bat, it's only a couple of hundred Monero. But they want to basically build up a nice treasury. They'll have the capital, and then they can use it as needed throughout this process rather than keeping going back to the people to ask for more funding. They're going to do it all at once, and then kind of figure things out as they go along and put the money towards it. So if you look through the proposal, you can see, I don't know if you want to scroll up, you can see some of the things Luke just kind of has like a question mark there. So those are the things that, really he's going to be outsourcing to other people and companies and contractors, consultants.
Yep, all the auditing.
But he's building up the treasury for it now, which I think is a great idea. That's just, once again, it's Luke, I think, being smart about things and his ability to not just conceive these concepts, but take action, right? And so he's also like a very good project manager, capable of like bringing all these things together to accomplish this project. So,
3,000 Monero is a lot, but we had a couple other proposals that were merged and they got funded within like 24 hours. It was several hundred XMR.
Yeah, not to mention the tremendous amount of Monero that's been going into the general fund, right? The donation fund. I don't know if you've
Yeah, we're just seeing like a hundred, few hundred at a time, yeah, just casually being donated.
What is going on there? I mean, beautiful to see, right?
They want it to stay, on the edge. They want people to work on Monero. They want to support it. Gotta stay ahead in the
and these are people that I'm sure are benefiting from Monero, right? Have benefited from its utility, and they want to continue to benefit from its utility. I have to imagine whoever this person is, right? wants to see Monero succeed, and it's probably because they're currently benefiting from it for whatever reason, right? Who knows? But there are a lot of people out there using Monero. We know it's the most used crypto on the dark markets. It's, you know, used for ransomware, and it's just used among people that want to transact in an untraceable way, that want to secure their funds in the most secure way. And Monero is, for those who know, have found their way here as being the most ideal thing for those purposes. Yeah, guys, and it looks like for the future we will be, of the improvements that are going to be made. You're bringing this up? All right, we kind of already started the news, right? Which is good. You want to get Tony up here?
I just want to mention, yeah, sure, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to mention the fact that the spam attacks have picked up again yesterday. They started going off, so... Yeah, everything's a lot better than it was before, but
not as high, right? There.
Well, it was 10K. It was pending transactions was 10K last night, which is around the max that they seem to reach it to for whatever reason.
Oh, okay. Now, but yeah, I was just looking at the overall transactions like per day. Like, I haven't seen it spike up to like 1.4. What is it at? Like 100K?
Let's see.
By the way, we're gonna have that image or that app running on the Nodo. By the way. So in addition to the news coming across the Monero Nodo, we'll have that depiction on the bus.
Let's keep climbing back up. 67K, 71K.
Okay. But still not as high. Interesting. But I guess you said that it's really more about how many transactions are lined up, right? At any given time. And you're saying they haven't gone over 10K?
Yeah, that's what it looks like so far. No, like previously in this time, they haven't seemed to line up more than 10,000 transactions. And of course, not all of these are theirs, but a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. We've got so many in the low fee line now that are minimum fee transactions. And then there's a lot here that are also minimum fee. And so that's how you also know it's the attacker, because it's got the lowest fee. And we've already fixed that fee bug.
It's like get your flood attacks in now, because you can only, you're not going to be able to do it for much longer with full membership proofs. Right?
I think this is part of why people are donating so much to General Fund, because I see what's going on, and they're like, we need Monero. This is too important. We can't just let this go. So, you know,
exactly.
We'll help the project even financially, you know?
Yeah, so, who's ever doing the spam attacks is spurring innovation in Monero. I don't know if they're doing it for that purpose or if that's just what's taking place. Who knows? We don't know, right? We don't know if it's an attacker, if it's somebody who's, you know, studying Monero and learning about Monero, seeing what they can do. We don't know if it's like it's nefarious purposes or if it's for positive purposes.
Yeah, that's the purpose of Monero, but unfortunately it can also be used for various purposes, but that doesn't mean that people shouldn't have privacy.
No, I mean this attack, right? We don't know.
Oh yeah, no, we have no idea.
If it's just for negative reasons, is it somebody who's, you know, trying to help Monero, or is it somebody's trying to hurt Monero, trying to trace Monero? We do not know. And if it's somebody trying to trace Monero, right? Like I this is what I never got about the Bitcoiners, right? The like ultimate their stance on chain analysis, right? It's like a whole campaign in part of the Bitcoin crowd. It's like against chain analysis, against the idea of chain analysis. You know, it's a product of the technology you're building. If people can trace it and there's value in tracing it, they're going to trace it.
Yeah.
And you could sit there and be angry about it all day long, but if that's what your tech allows, that's what's going to happen. So I never really understood, even to this day, you know, with we see the criticisms that are constantly launched against chain analysis companies. And like, yeah, I don't like them as a concept, just like I don't like corrupt pharmaceutical companies, right? But you know, they exist because of incentives in the system, right? And they've been allowed to exist. So it's we don't get rid of them by being angry that they exist. We get rid of them by creating technology that they can't work with, right? And that's where Monero comes in. And maybe we might be seeing kind of their final attempt at trying to do things with regards to tracing Monero. But once full membership proofs is there, it's really not going to be much left that can be done in terms of gain information about how Monero transactions, gaining insight in transaction.
Yeah,
unless there's something else that we're not thinking about, right, Tux? I mean, what else is there at that point?
I mean, there could be potential like issues with the implementation. I mean, that's why there's so many audits lined up for it.
But the
and this is just for the replacing current ring signatures. There's other issues and other parts that could occur, but you know,
I mean, that's really the weak. What are the other issues? You know, like there's no like major ones that I really know of, right? It was Ring signatures is really the weak point.
I mean, in the future,
transactions
like,
is very quantum is very resistance,
like Luke talked about last week, that'll have to be majorly considered, and not just considered. Eventually, it'll have to actually become a thing.
Oh, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw, that was another post he made that he's figured out the forward privacy aspects that he was talking about on the show last week.
Forward secrecy?
Forward secrecy, yeah. He pretty much knows how that could be. It's just, you know, I guess it's just phenomenal.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. So, because that's one of the big problems right now is the whole, like, store now, encrypt later, or decrypt later kind of policy that a lot of the agencies have. Right. It's just a
that's
matter
not,
of
that's
how
not to
long,
say that
really.
He's figured out how to prevent a quantum computer from like breaking confidential transactions or things like that, right? Like there's, but that's so far down the line, as far as I know.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that being said, let's go ahead and go with the news and
Tony
bring up any other Monero stuff, I guess.
And now for our weekly news segment.
Hey everybody, happy
hey, Tony.
Weekend.
How's it going?
What's up?
Good. I caught a little bit of the eclipse, which was really nice.
Nice.
Yeah, it was beautiful. The first time I was like, where is it? Because it was kind of cloudy. And then it came out of the clouds and it kind of blinded me. And then I put my glasses on. And I took some really nice videos, actually. I didn't get as nice of a view as you did. But it's still spectacular. And yeah. And it's going to be crazy in 2027, like you said, in 3 years from now.
Right.
This was really cool. We had Monero Tokyo there.
Well, I want to bring up, if I find it, bring up the eclipse, the future eclipse coming up, the path. It's cool to look at. But yeah, it doesn't have to be, it could be Spain too. Spain is going to be a hot spot for eclipses. So like the next three
will
all go through Spain. And the 2027 one that goes through Egypt will also go through southern Spain. So that's another possible Monerotopia location, right? Southern Spain.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That'd be pretty amazing.
And maybe you can have it like a prolonged, because if you tie it around Monero Con, say if it happens again in Portugal or whatever, and you kind of like, people just take trains from Spain to Portugal. So like a long week of Monero stuff to conference.
That'd be crazy.
That'd be crazy.
speaking of Monerotopia, guys, we're still on hold in terms of final decision whether or not we're making the pivot to Mexico City or not. It's still very much looking like that's going to happen. So we're closer towards that than I'd say staying with Argentina at this point. Tux, Tony, what do you think about that? I know I asked you. I'm asking again. What's your current take?
I'm for Mexico, just because. I mean, Tux has been there. I haven't last year, but just because. You already know the venue, you already know what's happening, and then this time you can make it so much better, and you don't need to go into the unknown. It's closer to you, it's not as much of a flight. And just again, like I was kind of impressed by the people and how happy they were to have increased revenue from from this happening. So it kind of makes the goal to make them really happy, like even happier.
Actually, so what the reason why it's taking us a little bit longer to make the final decision is with the marketplace. So we wanted to have the same girl that ran it last year, and we've been working with her. But the venue has already been reserved by another marketplace for the weekends that we wanted. But now we've reached out to this new marketplace, and they're also very enthusiastic to work with us because they've heard what happened with the other one. And that what we might even end up doing is... having the conference go from like Thursday through Sunday and have 4 days and actually have her do the marketplace Thursday, Friday. And then this woman does hers on Saturday, which why not? The more the merrier. And then it extends the conference because the conference ends up being like a marathon. Those 2 days, it's like you have like 8 talks happening on the main stage and like another 10 talks happening on the remote stage. It's like too much. It's like you can't, You're missing something at all times, right? Yeah. So if we make it like 4 days, people can kind of like, you know, maybe we only have like 3 talks on the main stage each day or something, right? So then people get to spend time in the marketplace, hanging out with Monero people, doing the hackathon thing if we got that going on. So not the worst idea, thinking about maybe doing that Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
No, I think it's such a good idea because people fly from all over the place all the way there. Yeah. So what ends up happening, as I've seen in Miami and then also in Mexico, people stay longer than 2 days anyway, because they want to hang out because they're all together. So they stay 4 days, or they stay maybe five, or, you know, more than the conference. So I think, for sure. I think that'll be awesome.
Yeah, we did Friday, Saturday, Sunday last year anyway, because we had to add Friday because we had too many talks.
Oh, yeah.
Thursday, Friday. I think it would just make for a nicer experience. It'd be less hectic. People just get to kind of casually enjoy the bonding time.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad that it won't be in Argentina. I know you were excited for that. I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. Buenos Aires, that's cool. But Mexico City is probably, I mean, it's Mexico is still extremely accessible to other people around the world. And it is closer to probably the majority of the people that are going, I imagine. Probably to the majority of the people that are going, it's a lot closer. So
it's like, are we missing out at on a moment in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, where we could really like be a part of some adoption phase that takes place with regards to crypto? I don't know. That's like there, but yeah, I don't know. Did you see George Gammon's post? Like he was just down there for a week. I don't know if you follow him at all or if you guys ever see any of his stuff. No?
Not so much, no.
Or maybe we could bring it up in the news. Actually, when you do the news, I'll bring it up. But he was basically down there for a week. And he's basically saying that from what he perceived, there is like no crypto adoption in Argentina.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which is really interesting. I think he kind of missed the mark. I don't know like what he was doing. Like, it's like he didn't hang out with local Argentinians when he was down there that are in crypto that could have showed him the ways. Like, so I found it very odd. But yeah, basically he's saying that everybody's just using pesos and dollars and that he accepts Bitcoin. Nobody even wants gold. And he has this whole theory as to why that's the case. But I think he kind of missed the mark on that. I don't know if it's all that. Maybe we could bring that up. Go ahead, Tony. Take it away while I look for that clip and move forward.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to generalize when it comes to that. You know, when you go to a new country and to try and see. I was kind of shocked by El Salvador, for example, when people started going there. And then people were not so maybe happy about Bitcoin, like 2 years ago or 1 year ago. So it's interesting. I'm not sure. But yeah, like Tuck said, I actually brought up the Monero transaction chart just so we can take a look a little bit. Highest 140K when we had the spam attack. And then kind of picked up again now, and we hit 110K yesterday. So, but what's beautiful, about Monero is that whenever it gets attacked, it's only an opportunity for us to get way, way stronger. So if you're an attacker that wants to attack Monero, just know that we're gonna use that to make it way stronger. So we don't mind these attacks at all. It's very interesting. Then. Also, this is pretty big, so we should discuss this. So Chain Analysis hires former IRS criminal investigations chief, Jim Lee. He used to work at the IRS, I think, for 27 years, so quite a long time. And then he was chief for, 29 years total of service, and then 3 years at IRS CI chief. So he has a lot of experience in the IRS, and he's going to work. He retired in March, as far as I know, and now he's working with Chain Analysis. So he's helping those agencies better use chain analysis data and tools to fight crypto crime. And he worked on some really big projects. He took down, he seized crypto from Hamas. He worked on the, where is it? Where he talks about the Hydra darknet market. Yes, so he helped down take the Hydra marketplace and Welcome to Video, which had a lot of child abuse and sexual exploitation. So he worked on a lot of really, really big projects, and he was successful in it. And it's going to be interesting the way, like, I wonder how he views this whole situation. Because he may be actually, like, he's working with Chain Analysis and he's benevolent, and he actually just cares about actually working towards taking down these criminals and terrorists. But then, you know, his work is going to be used negatively as well on the larger population. So it's interesting. Then, this one was cool. So, good times ahead of running a Monero node from home. Researchers unlock fiber optic connection 1.2 million times faster than broadband. And people are excited in the comments. Sheila wrote 1.2 million times faster. Holy guacamole. I don't think my little brain can even imagine that. That used to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is you know, this is a big deal, right? Because one of the things that's often discussed is the scalability of Monero, and you know, what Arctic kind of always points out is the thing that potentially holds up Monero's ability to scale is you know, internet bandwidth, particularly for upload on the upload side. So you know, if this is actually real, and it appears to be, I don't know how long it's going to take for it to essentially be implemented where we start to feel the effects of this evolution, but it's going to make Monero's scaling issues kind of go away overnight in that regard. And that's tremendous. It's always been, right, the theory, right, that the technology will catch up, internet will improve, and storage, and now we're seeing it happen real time in a big way. So that's super exciting.
So they say that in the average American household, any download rate is above roughly 242 megabytes per second. Now, in the UK, in Aston University, they recently managed to cope with about 1.2 million times that rate using a single fiber optic cable. So what does it mean? The international team achieved a data transfer rate of not gigabytes, but 301 terabits or 301 million megabits per second. By accessing new wavelength bands normally unreachable in existing optical fibers, which is just crazy because, you know, not more than a decade ago, we used to, like iPhones. My first iPhone had, I don't know, 4 gigabytes of memory in total, or 8 gigabytes, and just things get exponentially faster and more download speed and more memory. And so it's incredible. And it's going to affect Monero in big ways whenever it's going to come out. That's insane. Also, I wanted to say, actually, Romania, so we may have shitty roads, but we're in top five when it comes to internet in the world. We're up there with Hong Kong and everybody else. So our roads are not good, but we have really good internet. Like, really good. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I bet in the future, a lot of computers and devices will be able to terminate fiber on top of it, instead of having to go from fiber to RJ45.
Right.
Much faster.
It's going to be really interesting. Let's talk about Shadow Strike, and then we're going to get into Luke and other stuff in a little bit. But like the body said in the comments section, the cool thing about 1 terabits per second number is that it was achieved with existing fiber. Only modems need to be replaced.
That's insane.
This is not something that your phones, you know, or like even your desktop computer would probably be able, like right now, current internet speeds are very achievable for any device, but like terabits per second, that's like the amount of processing power required to handle that amount of traffic is insane. So there will need to be some technical developments in the, you know, for the modems and the routers and stuff, but it's cool that they can achieve those speeds though. That's pretty awesome to see.
Yeah. I mean, that's a major breakthrough for Monero, right? I mean, my understanding is that's the impediment Monero's ability to scale is the upload bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the question is though, how much are these like second or third world countries going to improve in their internet? Because the biggest problem I see right now is the ability for people in other countries that have very poor internet, very poor coverage, the ability for them to sync.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'd have to see improvement globally, right? Yeah, see, obviously, you're always going to have areas that are much further ahead than others. The average go up.
I think the average for sure too, because if not, and if the larger countries just develop, it's going to be pretty much night and day when it comes to development. Like, we're going to look like aliens when you go to other places, essentially. But yeah, cool stuff. Now let's talk about Shadow Strike. So Shadow Strike is a Monero to Bitcoin Lightning payment service. Load up your Tor browser and try it out. Go as low as you want. Top limit of 0.5 XMR for zero con transactions. This is really new code. Please try it and give feedback. Why Bitcoin Lightning? You wonder. Hard to attain. Instant transactions. Non-public transactions. Large amount of merchant exchanges accepted, but don't accept Monero. With Monero as the payment and only routing over Tor, the site can see who the sender is or their wallet history. You can see where the payment goes through. The receiver of the LN payment can see that the payment is coming from Monero, thus removing chances of taint. Additionally, this is an experimental run. It doesn't have big channels. I need to see how it fares with concurrent users. And Vic wrote, cool, when we have Lightning and Cake, we'll have XMR to Lightning swap payments. So that's interesting development. Then this is huge. Like, I can't believe it's been almost 10 years of Monero, and that's going to be on April 18th. It's really big. So
my second child.
That's turning 10.
Both my children are turning 10.
Oh, actually. Oh.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's yeah. So Monero Fox wrote a post on Supper. That's funny, dude. So you can join the Monero run and have all your coins in your own wallet during XMR's birthday. Monero runs are becoming harder to do just because we're not in as many exchanges anymore. And we'll talk about Kraken actually after. I'll skip to it. And then delisting Monero in certain countries. Write a tweet, post blog. Obviously, you know, let's all engage on social media and let's push the 10-year anniversary of Monero and have more people maybe discover Monero on that day. Turn your computer, start mining, buy something from a store using Monero. Just use Monero, essentially, and celebrate it. Because 10 years ago, something that actually has the potential to give people hope has been born. So, really cool. What is April 18th, actually? What day is it? 18th?
That's a good question. It's next Thursday. Yeah, I guess we'll do our Monerotopia show on Thursday night.
Yeah, or something, at least like even small, because it's a big thing.
Who should we get a special? We need like Fluffy Pony to come on as special guest, or some old school Monero. Binary Fluffy. Fate. That'd be awesome if we get Binary.
What if like somehow we make the show on Thursday and then we have Satoshi Nakamoto coming in and like joining the show?
We could get Nicholas Van Saberhagen and talking to Andre of Zano. I don't know if you guys watched those interviews. But he brought him up again a couple of times and I was asking him like, you know, what Nicholas Van Saberhagen thinks of Monero and stuff. So he's around. According to Andre, he's around and accessible. He just doesn't want to really like come out and talk. And I don't think it's so much, I guess obviously he wants to maintain his privacy. He's more like he's just kind of a shy person explaining.
What if we get him on the show, obviously no camera, with a voice modulator?
Yeah. I was going to try to get him as like a speaker at Monerotopia, right? That'd be amazing.
Yeah, but definitely.
I mean, you know, he'd be remote and anonymous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's like, yeah, I guess we're going to have the show on Thursday or something.
Let's do it.
Yep. Monero General Fund on Twitter. Donation alerts from community members, privacy by default. You can follow and then get notifications on donations and how much people donated. And people donate quite a bit of money, actually. From 0.002 to 99 to 400
Monero. Mm-hmm. It's coming in, there's those 100 donations that keep coming in consistently.
Mm-hmm. Jesus, oh my God. 2,696 Monero. Yeah.
So that's don't forget, when we get a nice little boost in price too, I mean, our treasury is going to go up overnight, right?
Absolutely. Actually, before I get into this, because then we're in Rocknium, let me get into other stuff and then I'll go back to it. That's pretty big. I'm going to go to Kraken. Just a little bit, because we talked about it previously, about Monero. So Kraken released Monero in Ireland and Belgium effective 10th of June 2024. Let me see. Here's what you need to know. Oh, we had an article.
We got Stephanie saying, hello from Texas. What's up? Hey. Cheers.
Hey, Stephanie.
We met her down there.
That's awesome.
Hope you're enjoying the gratuitous.
What's about some legislation or something that has been passed, I think, in Europe? And, but it's interesting, just in Ireland and Belgium. So if you're in Europe, you can still get Monero on Kraken. I think the UK, so Ireland, Belgium, and UK, I think you can't, I'm pretty sure. And then the rest.
Yeah, this is big news. Yeah, I was trying to get somebody to come up and talk about that this week. Somebody you know, who lives in one of these areas that wants to jump on. So if you're out there, come on up during Viewers on Stage. Mm-hmm. Want to hear about the D-list. So it's Belgium and Ireland.
We have, I'll try to get some, I know some people from Ireland.
Anybody wants to jump up and give us the lowdown. But, yep, more of the same, right? But Kraken was kind of, Kraken was our safe space. It's really our final, you know, refuge, right? In terms of being connected to centralized exchanges is Kraken. So Kraken is starting to crack.
There are a couple others in European regions, but in the US, Kraken's like, pretty much the only big player.
Yeah. Wait. So we'll see if they hang strong in the U.S. I mean, That'd be crazy. That'd be crazy if Kraken delists in the U.S. Mm-hmm. I don't know, guys. The congressional might start again if I see that happening. I don't know. I'm not going to stand on the sidelines, guys. I'm not going down without a fight.
There's no federal regulations against it yet, but you know, New York as a state now can't sell it there, but they can sell it anywhere else in the United States. So.
Yeah, but New York, it's never been legal to list Monero on an exchange.
That's great.
Well, I shouldn't say that, right?
I mean, before the regulations.
No, they've never done it, right? You need a BIT license in New York. No exchange currently lists Monero in New York, but it's just never been tested. No exchange has really tried to do it and work through the regulations with the regulators. I'm of the theory that we can list Monero here in New York. Nobody's tried to go through the process. As crazy as it sounds. I've spoken to Vic about this many times in the past. And keeping New York cut out of Monero has definitely hurt liquidity for sure.
I think so for sure. Just because of the way New York is. Because it's very... Right, like cash dom, and like, you know, you have little shops everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the money that went into Bitcoin early, you know, a lot of it was coming out of New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we need to like you know, start panning towards the developments in decentralized exchanges and
of course,
things like Hibino. Because I mean, having it on centralized exchanges is like that is like a big part for, I mean, Binance is debatable, but at least for Kraken, for liquidity, that's kind of a big deal. And it's just a place where like millions of people already have account on. So it's like, oh, Monero's there. They can just buy it right there. Yeah. But I think this year, next year, these centralized exchanges will definitely take off, not just for Monero purposes, but for other cryptos and other projects too. So,
yeah, it's another example of Monero being forced to evolve, right? We see these flood attacks, and what's Monero doing? It's upgrading its ring signatures, right? It's rushing now to do it. We see these delistings happening, and what's Monero ecosystem doing? It's rushing to improve the ability to on-ramp and off-ramp decentralized way, right? Yeah, like you said, Hibino, they launched, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about it after, actually.
Okay. Sort of. Yeah. Not quite.
Sarai is like right there, although I don't know how with Luke putting all his effort now in full membership, I have to imagine like he's gonna have to, I don't know, move away from Sarai for a moment, but I know that's super close. Tux, do you have any insight into how close that is to be?
The testnet's gonna be launched again it's gonna be relaunched next week.
Testnet. So it's like right there. It's crazy.
I mean, it still has a lot of work, but
okay.
We need to clone this guy. We got to clone Luke.
Like, yeah, this guy, he's like doing some of the most important stuff in the space right now. And it's just like,
well, because there's only so many people. Yeah, there's only so many people that can do it, right? In the world, right? That have all those skill sets and the desire.
But yes, we're all very thankful that Luke decides to take his time for this small little niche crypto project. you know,
this shadowy programmer. Yeah. Also, like, what's impressive about him is his age. He's young, right? Like,
oh my god, yeah. Yeah.
He's 19, 20 or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's young. So that's also really impressive. Yeah. One more thing on Kraken. So, not only the listings, but more KYC coming our way. So, what's new? Additional identification required. If you're a non-Spanish national, foreign's identity card. If you're a Spanish national, you know, bring more stuff, complete an app. So this is new, I think, because I haven't really used Kraken. A video type check with which ensures the face presented to a device belongs to a live human being. So you gotta open your camera and make a little video. And then refresh proof of address, provide a document evidencing your proof of address, or document evidencing your address. So quite a lot of stuff. Your ID, proof of address, a video of you, the stuff. We have seen that people have been able to bypass the video using AI. And then actually, which is crazy, so you can actually use AI to make yourself an ID that looks really realistic. And it's been able to actually fool these platforms. So yeah, I guess in the future, that's going to be the way. You know, don't take it from me. I didn't say that, okay? But, you know, just saying that's going to be a thing because people have already done it. But you didn't hear that from me. All right, Hibino, let's do a bit of Hibino, then we'll go into full membership proof. So Hibino 1.0 has been released today. Untraceable posted a tweet. He said Monero delisted from Kraken for Ireland and Belgium 2 months after he tweeted privacy is not a crime. In other news, Vino version 1.0 has been tagged, a BISC fork for Monero to fiat crypto peer-to-peer. So then they wrote what changed and new contributors and stuff like that. So that's exciting. So Vino's coming too. We have a lot of important development coming on our way.
Yeah, so. Not quite ready. Witcher told me that they're doing some internal testing on the mainnet, and the binaries aren't released yet. Of course, you can compile from source if you want to, but I guess probably next week it'll be officially out.
Mm.
Yeah, we'd love to get Woodser on Monerotopia or Monerotalk. Let's see. Yeah. Along.
Absolutely. Okay, now let's get into this stuff. Now, if you want to hear a more in-depth view of what we're going to talk about right now, go to last week, Luke. He talked about it in depth. He's the one behind it, so he's going to offer way more and better information. But Monero posted that we're excited to announce that the proposal from CipherStack to review generalized bullet proofs, which is part of the effort to implement full chain membership proofs, was fully funded by our generous community within 24 hours. Thanks to everyone that donated. So that's awesome. Did I have a link where you can go? Yes, it do. Yeah, so far, first milestone has been covered. In under 24 hours, it's quite remarkable the way the community gets together and just donates and gets stuff really funded really fast. That's really amazing. But yeah, guys, you use your Monero and donate to these projects, these people, because they put in a lot of work. And it's only going to make Monero better, obviously. So it's kind of like you're investing a little bit as well.
Yep, so that's very important what they're doing there, reviewing generalized bulletproofs. And that's one necessary component to be done. Full membership.
Quick thing. Somebody said, somebody said in the comment section, I deal with Kraken all day, every day on my employer's account. Kraken is turning into shit fast. They're introducing lots of bugs and not even responding to questions about these new features anymore.
Uh-oh.
So that's a negative review.
What's the guy behind? Oh, Jesse Powell.
Jesse, but he's not.
He's not there anymore, right? We never got him on Monero Talk or anything.
That'd be awesome.
We were never able to. He's not. But he's definitely pro Monero.
Yes, we need to get Jesse. Yeah, I'm not even sure what he's. I think he's still part of Crack. I haven't kept up with him. No, that'd be awesome if we can get him on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's the CEO anymore. Obviously, I guess he has his stake as an owner. Yeah. But I don't think he's active managing.
Yeah, but he does care about privacy. And it's hard to be in his position, actually, in a way, because running an exchange, and obviously if you go full out what you wanted, you know, with privacy and stuff, you're going to just get shut down altogether. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to balance it on his side. But he's been outspoken about privacy. And, you know, he's probably the only central exchange that ever tweeted, at least, privacy is not a crime or something along those lines. You know? So...
Yeah, I mean, he
all kinds of views.
Kept Monero on there in the U.S. Coinbase never did that. Coinbase never listed Monero.
Yeah. And for instance, they can. And just like looking at the effort, actually, like they listed Monero, but they try, and you can see that they're trying their best to keep Monero on it because it's kind of like, and regulation gets better now, you know, more robust and whatever. And you see Monero crippling in certain countries, like you're going to see in Ireland, New York, whatever. But like you can see the intention behind it, at least they're trying to have it on us, you know, as much as they can, as many places. Then, so this post from Monero again, Luke Parker has put forward a proposal to develop, prove, review, and audit full chain membership proofs, a trustless, solution based, and generalized bullet proofs in Monero. This guy is doing a lot. And again, you should definitely go to last week's talk, learn more about it from Luke himself, which goes in depth into all this stuff. And again, we should make a Monero proposal to clone Luke. We can get him a private chef so he doesn't have to do anything but just work on this stuff.
Yeah, you could bring the proposal up again if you click on that link.
Yep.
So we kind of... Oh, no, that's...
This one, right?
So we mentioned it earlier. Guys, go ahead and donate. This one just dropped. Be part of history here. You were there. You contributed. You helped make this happen. Luke's asking for 3,000 XMR to put towards this entire project. Out of that, a few hundred's going to go to him regarding the work that he's going to be doing, and then he's going to be managing this other work that he's going to outsource an expert.
Can't donate to this one yet. It's still got to be approved. Once it's merged.
Oh, it hasn't been approved. All right. I thought it was merged already.
It's still open. So you can upload it. You can upload it on the GitLab. Okay. If you sign in there, register, you can upload. if you go to the bottom of the message, scroll down.
Yes. Let me go even.
There you go. Yep. You can give it a thumbs up if you approve.
Give it a thumbs up, Tom.
Oh. Oh, no, I'm not signed in, actually. So I'm
all right, that's all right. Well, I'll give it a thumbs up.
I would have.
It's going to be approved. It's going to be merged. Once it is, send some Monero.
Yep, and he's very open, obviously, about the whole thing. Milestone.
I just can't, you know, I just can't wait to where we're at the day where we're celebrating the launch implementation proof. So it's not that far away.
Yeah, but just between these stuff happening and the fiber and so on, it's, yeah. Next year, we're going to have some really interesting stuff. I just like looking back. And okay, let's talk about Rocknium now a little bit. We have been talking about him for the past couple of shows. He's just been doing a lot of work. It's really amazing. So actually, let's skip and talk about him a little bit. So who is Rocknium? He's done a lot for the community. He's an empirical microeconomist, and he worked on discovering a mining pool misconfiguration, privacy vulnerability report to Exodus Wallet, formula for accuracy of guessing Monero real spend using fungibility defects, identification of privacy reducing non-standard transaction fees, analysis of the privacy impact of Mordinals, Monero NFTs. He's been at Monerotopia, so a lot of stuff. He's been working in Monero for quite some time, and he's doing amazing stuff. This one specifically, which has 3 milestones, and is in total of 204 Monero. Oh, somebody said you got this restaurant in Kenya. Cool. Accepted Monero and trying to get more exposure here for both Monero and the restaurants. Awesome, Dennis.
Cool, man. Yeah, jump up if you'd like to tell us about it. Show us a video of it or something.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, in Kenya. That's awesome. So this is more about what happened with the spam attack and him conducting more research, essentially, and then some items to complete the draft research bulletin. He talks about derive the trade-off function between ring size and transaction fees. He's going to work on this with Arctic Mine, I read. I must have read Arctic Mine somewhere. But similarly, the combined black marble attack and Dolmage Mendelssohn decomposition. Estimates any changes in the real spend age distribution during the spam incident, create a node network crawler that seeks the source of large transaction volume. So he's going to conduct a lot of research. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's our ring signature improvement expert, right? He's doing these statistical studies of Monero's ring signatures and finding the weak points, and then that information to kind of improve our deselection algorithm, right, is what's happening. But once again, hopefully these will be problems of the past, and we get full membership proofs. But it's nice to see that we still have people focused on this, because if, you know, full membership proofs doesn't come or doesn't come soon enough, we could still continue to improve ring signatures themselves, make sure we're getting the maximum security and privacy out of the current tech that we have. It's beautiful to continue to study.
And actually, I found it. One legend is going to work with another one, so... He said, I will work with Arctic Mine to evaluate changes to ring size, fees, and block size scaling parameters, balance privacy, usability, and decentralization.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is they want to kind of, you know, make an improvement before full membership proofs, right? Kind of thwart any attacks now. And you know, the sizes of things are going to go up anyway with full membership proofs, so it kind of gets the network ready in that regard.
Yeah, so... definitely another thing to donate to. Kind of, I wish I had the GIF open with "Take My Money" and the guy from forgot what show. Okay, now this one is interesting. So it says from Thomas Massey, I think.
Massey, congressman.
This is how the Constitution dies: by tie vote, the amendment to require a warrant to spy on Americans goes down in flames. This is sad for America. The speaker doesn't always vote in the House, but he was a tiebreaker too. He voted against warrants.
How crazy is that? That the speaker had to vote this time.
And he used that power.
And used that power for evil.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, he's supposed to stand. I mean, politically, where he stands, doesn't that move doesn't align with who he claims to be otherwise. I don't know if he kind of have these sort of ideals. Privacy. Fourth Amendment would be part of those ideals, right? Fourth Amendment, kind of a big thing from the perspective of a true conservative, supposedly in the Constitution. Yeah, dude, these fucking, they're all bought They're all completely bought out. Somebody like this, Thomas Matt, he's the 1%. There's one or two guys in Congress that are just actually legit, you know, liberty loving individuals.
He's a real human and not a lizard person.
Right. Yeah. He is. He's a cool guy. I think he's like, I think he's an engineer.
Yes. Engineer. Farmer.
He's an engineer. He's a farmer. I've seen like he's invented little contraptions for like taking care of his chickens and stuff. He's like, he's an intelligent guy. He's a Renaissance man and he's a liberty loving individual. He's like one of the dudes back in the day, right? During the founding of this country, they were amazing people. Not too many of those people are in politics anymore. They exist as people, but they're not finding their way into politics. Corrupt. Mm. They get filtered out. Yeah, I don't really know his story too much about how he's kind of made it this far.
Found a list of the names of the people that voted against. Yeah,
not a surprise.
Yeah. It's fast. Like it's done. It's illegal now.
Yeah, they're gonna now extend. What is it called? What is the actual?
Oh, the name of the legislation, or
yeah, that they're extending.
I don't know because I think I know we kind of discussed this.
Yeah, we've talked about
it. But I don't know. I know we brought it up before, but it's just like it's one of those things that it's just pure evil. Like you know,
it's basically allows like a loophole, like allows the U.S. government to spy on people without having to get for foreigners, but effectively get around that. Look up in databases that the government has access, can do it at will without.
Which was that even necessary? Because if I were them, to be honest, I wouldn't have done that because they're doing it anyway, and then I would have just hidden it under.
Well, there's that whole.
You know. Yeah. So it's.
Oh yeah. The Oh yeah. The actual bill to vote on was FISA 702. It was set to expire April 19th. So they had FISA.
The Foreign Intelligence Service ability to spy on foreigners, but there's loopholes in it wherein they could effectively spy on a lot of and do it. They don't to get go and get a warrant. Due process, no process. Actually start and spying on.
But the thing is, it's not just on American citizens because the top companies in the world that everybody uses globally are in America. Google, Amazon, and they have all this data. So actually they're spying on the whole world and they're getting all this data. So it's not only affecting American citizens, but it's affecting the whole world.
I mean, this gives you a little insight into, you know, what if something came before the floor of Congress with regards to banning Monero, right?
Have they ever? I don't think
they ever. Would you see a similar outcome? I mean, it's kind of a very.
Have they ever said the word Monero in court so far?
Not really. No.
Yeah, they haven't uttered the word yet.
Probably bring too coins. Much attention to it.
Yeah.
It's never they've talked about privacy. They never came in reports and stuff. But I don't think any Congress person on the floor of Congress.
Not yet. Got two more stuff for this week. So, Buddy said, or maybe we're all foreigners to the sovereign state that are the politicians and bureaucrats. It's true. It's an interesting one. Monero strongly people on privacy talks wrote. So, KickPay is one of the easiest ways to utilize crypto at some of your favorite stores. In March, we had over 80% of gift cards purchased with XMR, over 10% in Bitcoin, and 5% in Trocador app swaps. And you can get a MasterCard in the US with and Visa using Monero. And you can do all kinds of amounts. You can do $10 to $1,000 per card. So that's cool. And then this one, I wasn't able. I know Tux one time you were able to kind of open it somehow.
Try archive.org. Here, let me see if I can. Yeah, just copy that link and paste it in there and see if someone had archived it as a working archive. It tends to work.
Wait, no.
Yeah, do the one from April 7th. No, you had it right. Go back. Yep. Now, scroll down. Do the first one, April 7th. Nope, scroll up. See April. There you go. Now click on just one of those snapshots. Probably the first one. That's right.
Okay. I'll try again. No.
Screw the Washington Post. Me and my homies hate the Washington Post.
The title is essentially Lawmakers Unveil Sprawling Plan to Expand Online Privacy Protection.
I got it. I'll go ahead and share my screen.
Okay, cool. I'm going to stop mine. That was the last thing.
Sometimes my VPN does it, sometimes it doesn't, but it did work this time. There it is. Here we go.
Look, so. Key federal lawmakers Sunday unveiled a sweeping proposal that would for the first time give consumers broad rights to control how tech companies like Google, Meta, and TikTok use their personal data, a major breakthrough in the decades-long fight to adopt national online privacy protection.
So this new bill hasn't passed yet. It's going to be like what the European Union has, the attempt at that, right?
Probably a lighter version.
Yeah, a lighter version mandating, that companies have to follow certain regards to data and their data and how they, but we know this isn't the route to
no, this salvation. Is not. This is just, yeah, really you need to use things that have no concern of your data being available to the companies. Use things that are end-to-end encrypted. There's already services that exist that respect your privacy or have end-to-end encryption for the data they store for you. That's the real way. It's not relying on the government to wag their finger at companies and take money from companies, which really should be going back to the taxpayer, like with these massive fees. Like, oh yeah, Google got fined $10 billion. Woo, guess who that goes to? Not you. It's not going to you.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you look into things like this and you see there's people on both sides that are putting a lot of energy and effort into either trying to pass this or make sure it doesn't get passed. And when you really look at the end of the day, often the effort that's going into it and the money that's funding that effort has some incentive where they'll benefit. They're not looking to pass these laws because it's going to benefit the people. But at the end of the day, it's you corporate up somehow benefit from
I think this, companies should
from,
be
from helped, this new like, legislation that's yeah. supposedly going to
I think they should be held somewhat liable, but not in the way that the government just uses this as a means to steal more money out of the economy. And then I think that like consumers should be the ones holding them liable by suing them, refusing to use their services, whatever. But
yeah, look, like if I were in Congress, I mean, I don't know this well enough. I'd have to research it on the surface, but I assume this is something that you definitely vote for. But the whole we're saying is it's just more. We need less rules. We need to start like getting rid of legislation, not creating new legislation.
This is not the answer.
We need to start eliminating rules, departments, eliminating the government, not using government to give people liberty, but taking away government. It's easy to kind of look at this and be like, oh, but it's good. It's going to help people protect the freedom. It's just not how it works. The more rules and legislation we offer.
Like, are these companies suddenly going to be like, oh yeah, we actually care about privacy? It's like, no, like, they're not good. They're just going to like work around these rules as hard as they can.
It'll be hard for certain companies to work around it, and other companies will be somehow easier for them to work around it, right? And they'll be benefiting. It'll give them competitive advantage. It's like what we see with any of these other mandates that come out that are supposed to protect them from corporations. Some small swath of corporations end up benefiting more.
But so, with your wallets, people.
Here's the thing. So Google, all these platforms that are free. But why are they free? Because you're the product, like you're the data. So you're a gold mine, actually. So then if that's going to happen, what if maybe, I mean, that'll be cool. I don't think you're going to do it. But what if you pay to use Google, whatever, and then you get to just need your data? But I don't think they're going to be happy with that. Even
that's
if they make
Facebook, that's what Facebook said, is that if you pay, we won't sell your data. And that turned out to not be true.
Yeah.
These companies, they're not going to, like, no matter what, they're too far gone. Nothing's going to change for the good, ultimately. You just have to use something else.
Yeah, the incentives are always towards corruption. That's the way it's going to be. So we have to create tools that essentially corrupted.
Which is what we're talking about here every week. So guys, this was the news section. I want to mention before that we have 37 people watching on YouTube, 23 likes. But on Twitter, we have 152 people and 6 likes and only 5 retweets. So if you're watching on Twitter specifically, or X, however you want to call it, please go ahead and like and retweet, because it helps us a lot. There's a lot of you watching there. So it just helps the show grow and, spread the Monero word. So go ahead and do that. And other than that, we have price, we have dev, we have a lot of stuff still going. So.
We got a lot more to go. Oh my God. As always, it's always a marathon. No thanks to me. Keep labeling over here. I love this stuff, guys. This is, yes. That's what I like to do. The George Gammon thing, we'll bring it up later.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe. When we have viewers on stage, if we get some Argentinians to jump up. I know there's a few out there that are listening right now. Gombat, if you're around, you want to jump up. We could talk about that. Love to get your full take or reaction to what George Gammons is in Argentina, what the true scene, crypto scene is. Seems like he missed the whole Cuevas thing, but yeah, so I'd love to get your take on that. But Tony, thanks so much. Stick around if you can. Let's keep on moving. Price report.
All right, there's always Tony. All right, price report. Let's go.
The Monerotopia Price Report segment is sponsored by Local Monero. Avoid using KYC exchanges. Buy and sell Monero directly for fiat, peer-to-peer.
Hey, guys.
Buddy.
Hey, buddy. What's going on, man?
Just chilling. Sadly, I missed the eclipse. I mean, I tried to see it, but they cloud seeded, or they didn't turn on the harp machine to clear the clouds or something, you know. Obviously, it was the government's fault.
Did you guys, you were in the totality zone, but it was clouds?
Yeah. Yeah, I went to
What was that experience? So it must have gotten pitch dark then, right?
Yeah, it was nighttime, especially with the clouds. Yeah. Like it was basically nighttime. All of the street lamps kicked on and everything.
But that's cool.
Yeah, I went to West Texas, which, you know, you'd kind of think West Texas, it should be really dry. But yeah, we just had a bunch of storms roll in, which is actually somewhat common for this time of year.
I mean, it was raining a lot when we were down there for Finney Forum. It was cloudy, rainy most of the time.
Yeah. I should have just stayed in Mexico. People went to Mazatlan and they got a really good view.
Shit. But it was clear? It was clear down there?
Yeah. I've seen an eclipse. I've seen a total eclipse before, though. I went to Jackson Hole in 2017, and that's kind of how I knew it was something else, right? It wasn't just like, you know, when you were in school and you used the glasses and you're like, oh, wow, it's 85% or it's 50%, right? Like,
completely different experience.
I wanted to try and get my nieces and nephews to be able to see it. You know, they're still kids, so. I wanted them to hopefully see it, but the weather wasn't compliant, or the weather gods, or the gods of the weather.
My daughter, I brought my daughter, and it was definitely an experience. I told her, well, you know, we'll see another one maybe in 30 years. Although, unless we go to Egypt, I think that's, did you see that body? Did you look at the ones that are coming up?
I saw three
that are going through Spain.
Yeah, I saw that one. Is that the same one going through Egypt?
Yeah. There's like three different eclipses will be happening, I think, like all within the next 5 years.
I remember after 2017, I think it was like, maybe it was 2019 or 2020. There was supposed to be an eclipse in Argentina, and I was like, that's it. I'm going to fly down to Argentina. And then I was like, you never really made it down there.
Yeah. It's hard to find.
So all I'm saying is we'll see, you know, how the inertia feels when, Spain and Egypt come around. What year did you say that was? 25, 26?
I think it's 27.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I've been meaning to take kind of a long Europe tour for a long time. So, you know, like go there for 2 or 3 months and just kind of explore around Europe.
Yeah, especially if you have, you know, maybe do a Monerotopia there, southern Spain. Beautiful. I've been to Spain. I haven't been to southern Spain.
What about like, you mean like do it during the eclipse?
Yeah. Egypt would be cool too. And that's like guaranteed clear skies. I mean, unless you have like a sandstorm.
You could always hop in an airplane and try and get above the clouds or a sandstorm that way.
But man, take it away.
Cool, yeah. So we had kind of a price drop across the board. I guess it was yesterday or maybe recently, like this week, at the end of this week. Which, you know, really wasn't that big a deal. So we're on the 1 hour chart here. This is Bitcoin. You know, it was kind of hovering just above the previous all-time high and then took a dip down to 65,000, seems to be hovering at the moment. You know, like nothing, there's really nothing there to be concerned about for the moment. I still tend to think that there is the opportunity to go higher. With this recent drop, you know, that kind of changes the outlook just slightly. You might say, yeah, that's showing a bit of weakness there. In a macro sense, you would say that there's still probably availability pump that could happen. But we also saw with stocks, we saw stocks kind of fall out of their channels. And I know it's kind of been a couple weeks since we last spoke here. But stocks have all kind of fallen out of their channels. And you know, everything else is kind of like showing a little bit of weakness. So that's the big backdrop there that we're looking at. Monero also experienced the same drop as everything else did, just like kind of temporarily. Yeah. So, okay. Let's take a look at, so Xano, that's fine. It can pump, you know, it's a new coin. That's slightly different, but like take a look at Pirate Chain. Within the course of a single week, you get this like this massive pump here. It made 158%, right? So that's like 2.5x. So that pumps 2.5x. Darrow made within the span of 1 week also, a 2.5x. And then Monero doesn't get any of that. So one thing I thought was interesting we could look at too is the Monero versus Zcash. So obviously we know what this, so this is Monero divided by Zcash. So as this chart goes up, that means Monero is getting valued higher relative to Zcash. And obviously, you know, we suffered a pretty significant loss, basically minus 50% against Zcash with the Binance announcement, the horrible delisting. But what you'll notice is that already we're basically back in the same, like just now recovering to that same zone that we'd been at for really like a whole year. So yeah, I mean, it is what it is. it's completely unsurprising, right? I am Jack's complete lack of surprise here. But I think it is interesting that when you look at all these little weird shit coins and everything else, you get these crazy 2x, 3x, 4x pumps and Monero just has none of that. So it does tell you that there is something different. At a bare minimum, it makes you ask the question, why? Like, why would that be the case? I think we all, you know, here in Monerotopia, we all basically have a pretty what's going on there.
Look at the people that are involved in those projects, right? They seem to be the same crew, right?
Yeah, it's the same cabal.
Yeah. Which is, you know, let them do their thing.
The same
people just be aware of it, guys. You know, cautious there. Why would Pirate Chain just 3x out of nowhere? What was there some? Did they implement full membership proofs or something? Did Luke Parker start working on Pirate Chain? Like what bullish thing happened? Like,
I think there actually was. I can't remember what someone like. I saw it on Twitter. I should have saved it. I should have made a note of it. It was like some offhand thing. Pirate Chain was being accepted for something somewhere. Maybe I'm just hallucinating that memory at this moment. But
yeah.
So, all right. Well, I guess back to Monero. In terms of like relatively, how did we perform? Obviously, you know, the two big ones to look at are Monero versus Bitcoin and Monero versus Ethereum. You know, those two coins effectively comprise. I mean, it's like 70 or 80% of the market cap of cryptocurrency. But anyways, so yeah, Monero, in terms of like everything falling, kind of the drop off that happened in the past few days, Monero performed, you know, relatively about the same. I guess there was a little bit of a drop off here relative to Bitcoin. I say little, Jesus, that's 10% technically. I mean, I would still call this a bottoming pattern, right? How long does it take for this bottoming pattern to play out? Is anyone's question. One thing that I wouldn't like in a technical sense here, like as a sort of a counterpoint to what I just said about this potentially being a bottoming pattern. Oh, you know what? I just realized something. My charts are really, really wide, aren't they? There we go. Now everyone knows the resolution of my main monitor, double wide monitor. Hopefully that's better. Can you guys see a difference there?
Yep. Looks good.
Hopefully it's taking up the, I don't know, correct amount of space on the screen. Okay. So anyways, one thing that I don't like here in a technical sense, on the RSI, so that's the purple line here. I need to change this. I never really look at RSI, but everyone likes it. So let's just remove the yellow. I prefer RSI to be yellow just because the contrast looks nice. Okay, so anyways, we're looking here at RSI. Make that line a little bit thicker. One thing that I've said for a long time about RSI, so this would technically be called a bullish divergence, as we've talked about for the past few weeks. Price is making lower lows while the RSI is making higher lows, right? So you're basically showing momentum developing towards the upside. The only thing that I don't like about this is that I typically consider RSI to be reset once it's hit that 40% level from the lower side, or the 60% level if you were coming from like bearish divergence right from the top. So in a sense, you might say that that RSI has been reset, although this pattern has been developing for a while now. So it's possible we could go to the weekly here. And it doesn't quite look like bullish divergence, on the weekly. The main thing in my mind that I would say here is that at the end of, I expect that, the next bear market in crypto will probably see the ratio of Monero and Bitcoin improve. That just seems to make too much sense to me, right? It's just too easy to say, yeah, the people that want to keep Monero suppressed are going to buy their bags, are going to try and acquire it when no one's watching, when nobody cares, when the plebs have left and the excitement and the hype is gone. They're going to try and acquire enough bags that they can sell that on the market during hype times. Because again, they don't want you buying Monero. They just absolutely don't want you to have it. And it's amazing to me. Like I honestly, every day, guys, every day I muse on this. I'm just like, how is it possible that like everything else is listed. Everything else is fine. Everything else is kosher. Bitcoin gets included into the traditional finance system, and the Monero is just being relentlessly attacked from all sides, like, and has been for years now. I just still, I can't fathom how a single Bitcoiner couldn't look at that and say to themselves, yeah, there's some important signal there. I mean, of course I can fathom why they don't do that. You know, obviously it's an emotional kind of thing, human psychology, monkey brain, tribal dynamics, et cetera. But yeah, that is a poignant thought in my mind. Okay. Let's look at Monero versus Ethereum, because again, Ethereum number two market cap coin comprises a significant amount of market cap. And again, we're looking at a very similar action here. You know, I really, this kind of chart, like this thing should go up at some point to that lower standard deviation line. And in fact, it really already should have done that. Like in a pure technical sense, right? Like there's other ways of looking at the market other than just technical, but I look at that and I say, yeah, that's suspicious. One thing we haven't looked at for a while is the XMR longs minus the XMR shorts on our very trustworthy exchange Bitfinex. And right now you'll notice an interesting pattern that developed really since the middle of 2022. We've basically been right near that zero point. Like there's a slight bias towards XMR longs, but, overall, like we just have not seen the kind of oscillations that we've seen, that we saw for, you know, for years, especially in the most recent bull market. So I thought that was interesting. Something I just kind of noticed this morning that, we sort of flatlined there almost on the longs versus shorts, but it's also Bitfinex. So like, how much do we trust them? Do we really care? I don't know. It's worth looking at, I suppose. Let's see. We've got some Poloniex, is always doing weird, crazy shit with their price divergences. They like to be minus 10%, minus 5%. Currently, they're actually pretty good. They're only like minus 2%. Which is uncommon for them to be that closely pegged. So everything else is still somewhat near the zero point. Again, I do think it's important to multiply by volume on this chart. It's just a matter of I need to take the time, to go meticulously through every single ticker that I can find where Monero is traded, versus USDT and, USD, USDT, maybe even USDC if it's out there. Just to go through every single ticker that's out there and then compile all of that data to tell you what the volume weighted price divergences look like. I bet you there's signal in there. At some point I'll get it done and I'll let you guys know when I do that. It's just kind of like on the back burner, mostly because I don't trust volume. I just don't trust crypto volumes. Okay. Let's take a look at some of the altcoins, some of the shitcoins. You know, actually before we do that, let me talk a little bit of a news piece. Oh, you know, also, let me pull up you. I should be looking at the YouTube comments. Just when my system crashed, I tried to get up and running as fast as possible. I just want to make sure that I'm getting people that are asking questions on YouTube. Okay. There, Florida, there's just not much to say about XMR USD chart. I would say at the moment, I don't like the way this chart looks, in terms of the wave magic, in terms of these standard deviation lines. I don't like that we're well below, we're like now trending below the orange bands here. That's not a good sign. If the rest of the crypto market starts to pull back, Monero is going to suffer the effects of broadly, any major pullbacks in crypto. Or, you know, bear markets, right? Like it's possible. Who knows? This could be the top and we could be going for a bear market here for the next year. That's totally possible. I don't necessarily think that's the highest probability thing at the moment, but, it's certainly not a remote possibility. And given that, I just don't like the way this chart is currently set up with Monero trending below these bands. Maybe Monero doesn't have to follow nearly as much down with the rest of the market. I mean, it doesn't seem to be following up with the rest of the market. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see on that. But in terms of the rest of the technicals, like the only thing I could really show you would be like hourly charts, which I haven't prepared any short-term charts on Monero at the moment. I feel like if I'm being really honest, guys, I have an emotional component when it comes to Monero analysis. And I also have a little bit of kind of like the bias of I want to tell you guys good things. And so it biases me when I analyze the Monero chart, which is a reason I don't trade Monero. Like I just try and like keep my HODL. When I have profits, I try and move a portion of those into Monero. You know, so it's kind of like a recognition of my own self limitations in that regard. Maybe I'll try and overcome that and give you some short-term analysis. The other thing too is that I regard short-term technical analysis to be much less reliable than long-term analysis. So in terms of the long-term analysis on Monero's chart here, I guess one thing you could say was interesting is that, let's try and draw this line a little bit better. So this line right here, you'll notice that kind of one of the best fit lines we could draw sort of had that, that wick there, on the delisting. You'll notice that wick basically touched that line. So that could be kind of a good sign in a way that's saying, hey, this line right here really is, you know, like we really are leaving that behind. That's really going to become irrelevant now. And hopefully, you know, we just trend sideways. You know, we had, you'll also notice that we had kind of like a double bottom here. Let's drop a horizontal line there. We double bottomed from the bear market low, that happened in June of 2022. So again, that was kind of like an interesting confluence of place that you might expect to actually hit a low there. At the moment, like overall, I still don't like the way this chart looks. And I could only tell you that from like somewhat of an instinctive perspective here, like just my intuition. Maybe we can try and draw some more pleb lines. This is always dubious, you know, like I'm just doing this in real time with you guys right here. This is something I might do on my own, like just try and draw some pleb lines and see how that looks, you know, like, okay, maybe there's kind of like a downtrend there. You know, pleb lines were meant to get broken. I guess we go back to the daily. Yeah, perhaps at the moment we might try and draw some kind of pattern that would look like this, where we've got this sort of sideways triangle. Maybe we draw that line a bit like that. Again, it's always slightly dubious. You know, maybe if we can break this to the upside, maybe that would spell some upside. One thing that you'll notice that did happen in 2021 is that Monero had a big pump with the rest of the market just before that massive crash in May of 2021. So perhaps there's like some steam pressure building up on Monero here. Perhaps we could see some big pump to the upside, maybe back to the $200 range before, you know, we get some big major pullback in the crypto market. And it is interesting because like there has been very few major pullbacks in crypto and Bitcoin for months now. Like things pump to the upside here and just have continued pumping. I don't think we've had anything more than maybe 15%. What would that be? I guess that'd be 20%. We haven't had it like a 40% pullback, right? Which is the kind of thing we've seen with other bull markets typically in the past. So yeah, so far there's no major pullback here. Right now, Bitcoin is still consolidating. So we kind of had talked about that maybe two or three weeks ago now, where we said, hey, maybe Bitcoin needs some consolidation time here. It's gone pretty far. We're sitting here at these all-time highs. I don't necessarily believe that these highs are, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. Obviously, the ETF had real money moving into Bitcoin because now it's okay for all the plebs in the traditional finance markets. It's okay for them to buy Bitcoin now because it's an ETF and it's approved and holy and sanctified by their overlords. So, you know, they threw a bunch of money at it. At the same time, I kind of think, hey, that's an opportunity for a lot of insiders to unload their bags. That's a massive amount of volume. And last time we were at these prices 2 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, really. Yeah. 3 years ago, insiders were unloading their bags, right? That's what they were doing at these prices. So yeah, no, it's dubious. It's questionable. Are they really unloading all their bags? No, probably not. At the moment, you would say that we have kind of this pennant forming on the Bitcoin price right here. A break of this large pennant will probably signal, the next direction. And when I say break, I mean confirm sustained break. One thing that you can do in trading, notice that things got above, right? And then the very next day closed below. So this will trap a lot of people. When you're trading, this pattern will trap a lot of people. You'll break this, this kind of like this line here. And actually it's kind of a poorly drawn line. Let's draw it more. We'll try and make this as shallow as possible and use the daily close price instead of the daily wick price up there. Although normally I would say to do it up there. Because we have two wicks that reach that price. I know that this is a messy chart, guys. Hopefully this makes sense to you guys. Okay. So anyways, we've got our little pleb line drawn here. We're saying, hey, we're going to trade off of pleb lines. And then, oh, look at this on Monday, of this week, Bitcoin breaks to the upside. It breaks that downsloping line. All right. We're going to go off. Nope. The next day it closes right below. And so this is something you can do. You could say, okay, yeah, we broke the line. We closed the day above it, but did we close the second day above it? Do you have two consecutive closes above that pleb line? If not, then you could be about to get taken for a ride. And this happens very often. Like this is a good way to protect yourself from false breakouts that happens, like if you're a short-term trader or whatever. So, I mean, at the same time, like this is bullish somewhat action, right? You're looking at that saying, hey, you know, it was kind of flirting with breaking. Then it came to the downside. Maybe you got to crush some of those longs that came in here, right? Probably a lot of people trying to get long right there. Maybe crush those longs, crush the leverage traders, and then break it, you know, a little bit later after some more consolidation. So, I still tend to think that Bitcoin, my balance of probabilities puts Bitcoin at 80,000 or slightly higher before we get the next major crash or pullback. But, you know, I'll let the markets tell me in real time if that's going to be the case. Right now, this chart does look bullish. It does look like there's more juice to squeeze. Bitcoin dominance also has been looking bullish. And as much as I hate to say that, I've been maybe for the past couple of weeks, I've kind of been looking at this chart thinking, yeah, this thing is starting to look kind of bullish. And then we had that break recently. So, technically, we're still kind of below this pleb line right here. We're kind of on the underside of that pleb line. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're going, you know, that this, I say we, I don't know, I say we, I'm not a Bitcoiner. So this thing could definitely get, so notice this line right here, this area, right? This area, which was back from 2020, when Bitcoin, when the dominance was just really, really crushing it. And, we had to hear all the narratives back then. Bitcoin still hasn't even touched that time, you know, that lower area. It hasn't gotten anywhere near to the level that it was back in 2020 and 2019. I think most of this was spurred on by Plus Token Ponzi, scooped up a shitload of Bitcoin. And it's funny because the top of the market in 2019, that reaction rally in mid 2019, the exact top of the Bitcoin market there was literally the day that those guys got arrested. I'm not convinced. Again, like I keep saying for a long time, I'm not convinced of where the Bitcoin dominance chart goes. I think long term, this chart should trend towards the downside. I just don't see how Bitcoin is, especially with all the problems they're having now. It's kind of funny though, because the problems they're having now might actually support their price, right? They've got the degeneracy, they got the NFTs and the BRC20 tokens. They can get a lot of that market cap wrapped up into their chain now. And that might actually be in a big way saving their price, like, which is funny. There's another thought I had here that this week that, it's, if you look at the narratives from the maximal, it's funny because their narrative was something like dollar milkshake, like Bitcoin is going to force all of the governments to participate. It's going to be so good at competing. Everyone's going to be using it. The governments, you know, they'll have to hash wars and they'll have to, like, even if they don't want to, governments will have to incorporate Bitcoin into their reserves and their finances. Because Bitcoin is so good that it'll force their hand. That's not how and why Bitcoin actually got incorporated into the U.S. traditional finance system. There was no court cases that said, hey, you, except for the ETF, right? But Bitcoin is not incorporated as reserves. Bitcoin, they didn't like really, really try and massively suppress Bitcoin. They said, hey, you know, it's a good asset. They like some of these guys, some of the top guys, I think it was Charlie Munger. It was like, we're going to get control of Bitcoin. Maybe it was Warren Buffett. Like, hey, we're going to get control of Bitcoin. And it kind of looks like they did, right? And Bitcoin isn't actually used for hardly anything. There was no like forcible hand that forced the United States government to incorporate it. They just kind of chose to do it because it seemed useful. So anyways, that's just kind of like a rant. Like, yes, Bitcoin is being incorporated into traditional finance, but not because it forced their hand, because hyper Bitcoinization is in progress. Like, there's almost no like hyper Bitcoinization in progress. We got the dominance here. It is still looking good. It is still on an uptrend. So, just know that could continue for a while. Maybe we could take a look at some shitcoins too. Why not? Hey, this is the current status of some very popular shitcoins. Maybe I'm just a boomer when it comes to shitcoins, and like there's a whole new set that, that I should be looking at. I don't know. But everything, you can see everything fell off this week in terms of their Z scores. Again, these are Z scores, so it compares their own volatility, right? This is a representation of how they're performing relative to itself, relative to its typical volatility. So that's why they're all like kind of centered around the zero line. That's what a Z score is supposed to do. Very useful statistical thing for anyone out there that pays attention to stats, has a little bit of stats background. Z scores can really normalize charts that have totally disparate performance, disparate values. Like, Z-scores are really good at normalizing things so that you can compare them side by side in a certain way. Everything's gone down. I guess I'm not really seeing anything of note on this chart. I guess Monero, we had a little like spike, like right, I don't know if you guys can see that, right here in the last, like, what is today, 13th? Oh, I guess today. Yeah, as of today, Monero has had a slight recovery here that doesn't look like the other coins have had. They all kind of leveled out a little bit. Maybe,
yeah, that was slightly interesting to me, because I was watching this yesterday, because there was like a correction that happened, and everything just kind of seemed to tank like 10%, and including Monero, but then Monero quickly came back, and it hasn't been down as much as the others were, excluding Bitcoin. But all the other altcoins are down 10 to 13%, but Monero is only down less than 6%. So right now, as it stands. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of funny because that's a little microcosm of the bear market action that we've talked about, that during a bear market, Monero should, you know, in a long-term bear market, Monero seems to perform better than other coins, probably because of its actual usage as money. It's actually
that, but then at the same time, I mean, there's no correction for Monero to be made. It's already been like kicked to the curb before all this pumping happened, and it never quite take off like everything else.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I hope, fingers crossed, I really, really want to hope that because of all the negative action we've had, because of like just the big washout. And I mean, it should be that most of the only people that are left here, the people that are actually using this thing, that actually want Monero, my hope is that really limits our downside in any kind of like negative price environment. I would love to be able to tell you guys that would definitely be the case. But I can't tell you that because I just know that the people that want to suppress Monero are powerful and they have a lot of little tricks up there. So, you know, all right. I guess that. We just got to accept that, right? We just got to accept that and keep using it, keep improving. I am like super impressed that that's crazy how fast Luke is getting full membership proofs rolling on this thing, like just single-handedly.
That's incredibly bullish, if anything.
I mean, our transaction count is going through the roof. We're making amazing.
Well, artificially.
Yeah, but it's still happening though, right? Whatever it may be, but the usage of the Monero system is going up, right? Artificial or not, but it's for me, that's another bullish indicator. The technological improvements that are happening, and then just adoption overall, people actually Monero. I mean, all those things are trending up, and just, it's inevitable that network effect will kick in and the value of the coin will start to match the value. They can't suppress that, right? Because at some point, the value of the network of the coin will reflect the value of the network, and the value of the network keeps going up.
I mean, it's a matter of people actually using it, you know, whether or not people are truly using it for transactions, which we are, like people really are using it. In a lot of ways, I tend to think that sort of that core of philosophically consistent people that were in Bitcoin 2014, 15, 16, you know, before that massive 2017 bull run, the people that were in Bitcoin for the reasons of digital freedom money, I feel like those are the people that are here in Monero. And most of the people that came after, those guys are probably mostly just concerned about number go up. That's not to say we haven't added more people that are concerned about freedom as well. And, it's just that, you know, I think they're like fair. They would call them sunshine patriots. I think that's Samuel Adams. Samuel Adams. You know, like they're libertarians. They're freedom oriented, but they're sunshine patriots. Like if they don't get those mad gains on their crypto, then they don't really care too much. Crypto failed, right? And this is what they say about Monero. It doesn't have the mad gains, so it failed. I tend to think that Monero basically just still has that very similar level of digital freedom money support that Bitcoin had back in, back in those somewhat still early days. That's totally speculative on my part, but it just kind of feels that way. You know, and the other thing too is that you've got Bitcoin Cash and it's got all its problems, but a lot of those people did go to Bitcoin Cash, and it does seem like a lot of those people are still there. It's unfortunate that we seem kind of a little bit divided. I'll never support Bcash probably. Like as long as Monero works and isn't at capacity or whatever, like I'll be using Monero, not Bcash, or I'll be using some other shitcoin for, you know, whatever degenerate purposes I might be using, or, you know, maybe I'll be in Argentina and just using Tether, which requires you to use Tron or Ethereum. That was part of that tweet you mentioned, Doug. Mm-hmm. What's the guy's name?
George Gammon.
Yeah. So he was talking about, was it him or, no, I think it was one of our guys, Gombat. Was talking about, okay. He was posting charts that USDT is used significantly in Argentina for like big purchases.
Yes. Right. Yeah. George Gammon was saying crypto's not being used at all. And Gombat's saying you're just looking in the wrong places. The coffee shops might not be open to accepting it, but people that are purchasing things online in Argentina are using crypto.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you? But the chart he was posting was USDT, which I thought was funny because I've been shouting that like from the rooftops for 2 or 3 years now. Like USDT is going to beat Bitcoin for the monetary medium of exchange use case if they don't do something, and they haven't done anything and they're not gonna. So the simple reality is that USDT in a lot of ways is emerging the winner from this whole scaling bullshit. And I think USDT on like rollups, Ethereum layer twos, and maybe Tron or Solana or wherever else they might implement, like USDT seems to be winning this fucking war. And that's really, really a big shame. The good news is that, like, again, Monero's still here functioning, doing what it's supposed to, owning the darknets, you know, as like, which isn't, you know, obviously we shouldn't be saying, hey, let's target darknets, right? Like, I don't really do drugs and I don't necessarily think drugs are great. They can be useful, but anyways, it just shows that, hey, this thing works in an austere environment. Like it's functional when you really, really need, that protection, and people are always going to really, really need protection from time to time. So like Monero will always be there. It'll always be, relevant, even if it's not like winning, you know, like in the way that USDT is currently winning. One thing I wanted to point out here, shifting gears a little bit. So to the Monero transaction counts, the fact that we saw this big drop off for like 2 weeks, from that, you know, over 100,000 all the way back down, you know, round tripping all the way to like 20,000 almost. If this was really a nefarious attack where these guys were trying to, unwind the chain and Black have high probability, we wouldn't have seen this drop off. They would have just kept it above 100,000. Like any entity at that level has more than enough funds to keep this rolling. They wouldn't have done that because that kind of screws up their ability to do the blackball chain analysis, right? To remove outputs like that. That's an entire section that they don't have. So my guess now is that this is probably a friendly entity or at least a neutral entity. Maybe.
Well, the argument could be though that they want to make sure they keep the network usable, keep using it. Like, so they want to do spam it to the max to where they're not interfering with actual real use, because otherwise, what are they doing at that point? They're just the only ones using the network, and yeah. So there's really no one to even gain data on.
Yeah, so that's one of the ideas I had, because that's why that's the 10K cap. Because right, if they exactly. do so much that's not usable, well, then they have but if Body, you think it is a neutral entity, well, then yeah, there has been some on the side. There has been some good things that came out of this kind of in a way. Where wallet fee bug was fixed and now full chain membership proofs are being like fast forwarded basically, which I don't know if that was purposeful or not, but that's happening.
There's a lot of things that could be accomplished
Luke Parker just has little server running on the side spamming the Monero network. They had a little more. All right. Now they're moving. Got everybody moving.
I mean, I think the cost at spamming the network was something like a total of $10,000 there. Maybe it was like 20. It was something like $400 or $500 a day to spam the network.
Nothing.
It's like for a chain analysis entity, it would be nothing. I just have to think like we were nowhere near our maximum capacity on Monero as a network. The network, like everything was still usable minus some problems with the wallet.
Couple issues. It was the problem with the wallet fee bug, and then it was also the node software does need some work on it, but like the protocol as it is designed was definitely not reached its capacity, because dynamic blocks only it didn't even end up going up super high. I think the maximum block size was like 360 kilobytes. Could have gotten way higher than that, but the node software definitely needs some fixes and some efficiency improvements.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't argue with that. Just in a broader sense, I feel like there wasn't really it wasn't a huge deal. Like in terms of being able to still use the network, there were some problems, there were some hiccups. By the time that these transactions dropped off, the main problems had already been addressed. So, I mean,
yeah, people not getting their transactions for 40 minutes, that was just because of the fee bug. And that's a non-issue now. So, anytime anyone would use Monero, like now, even though it's 10K transactions, and I think right now it's like 4K, they're not even going to notice, not going to feel it. Now, syncing will be slower, and not because of the nodes. Some of the node issue has been dealt with, not necessarily the efficiency of Monero D, but I think people have across the board bolstered up their nodes, made them more beefy. Another thing, which I had mentioned before, is that it will just take your phone longer to sync because there's way more transactions in each block. So instead of it being 50 to 100, now it's like, or less than 100. Now it's like a couple hundred transactions in a block. It will take your phone longer to process that. So it's not just nodes syncing slower. Your phone has to do more work. So there you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Wanted to throw out there, we were talking about this concept of the spam attack kind of spurring innovation and how well the network handled it. And we are personally affected by it with the Noda. So we actually, out of this came the decision to raise the RAM in the Noda. So we doubled the RAM to 32 gigabytes. So kind of future-proofing the Noda more towards being able to handle the network as it's used more. So yeah, just
is it extra cost something to bring up. Like standard?
Yeah, no, we're raising the price of the Noda as well. But a decision was made to, you know, at this point to bump up the RAM, double it. In talking with Arctic Mine and things, you know, this, it would just be the smart thing to do. So the Noda, you know, we could kind of say that the Noda will be usable on the network for, you know, let's say 8 years, right? Where we're going.
I mean, the main issue with RAM isn't so much P2P as it is RPC traffic and the ability to quickly sync tons of devices. So the main advantage of having more RAM is that LMDB, which is the database that's used to have a lot of the information in memory, mm-hmm. is going to be able to store more of the blockchain in RAM. So if you've got a lot of people syncing, then that's an advantage where Monero D doesn't have to use disk as much, which is much slower than RAM. So
yeah, so we raised the price. So anybody who didn't purchase the Noda yet, we did raise the price and we increased the RAM. So the Nodas are now $650. I mean, they were too low priced to begin with in terms of making things sustainable, but we wanted to keep the price low in the beginning to get some early adopters, which we did. We greatly appreciate all those who did that. And yeah, decision was made to raise the RAM. What's the price?
Just 6 Monero. I could part with 6 Monero for a Nodo.
Yeah, that's another thing to note too, right? Is there really would have been no hiccups if everybody was running their own node, right? The issues we saw were obviously there was the wallet issue, right? But we wouldn't have been seeing that remote node issue where
it wouldn't have been as bad. Now there's still like, once again, there's some locks between P2P traffic and RPC part of Monero D. That'll get worked out eventually. But yeah, if you did run your own node, you would have
like theoretically, if everybody was running their own node in that instance, I think it would have been very, very smooth.
The difference is, way less noticeable if you just have one node that's got maybe a few RPC. But I did notice yesterday, my little node computer sitting next to my desk, I did kept hearing the fan spin up. I was like, huh, what's going on? Look at the transactions. I'm like, oh, that's what's going on.
So, yeah, that's funny. That's so you know when the transactions are bumping just by the fan speed.
it does use a lot more CPU because of all the transactions that it's got to process, and then the ones that are currently pending that are coming through. So it's just the P2P traffic at that point.
Huh. We got to that's a good idea for something to display on the Noda as well.
TX.town always open.
Yeah, no, TX.town will have on there, but the usage of the Noda itself, right, showing its how much demand it's currently under would be cool.
You could put like a little light, like a LED, like maybe say like 5 or 6 of them. Yeah, it's like you get one more LED for every, I don't know, every 100,000 transactions or something. You guys remember Mordinals, obviously?
Yeah.
Of course. I actually
one of the main guys that was like doing the Mordinals, I remember chatting with him a little bit just on Twitter or interacting with him some, and he wasn't nefarious, like in any way whatsoever. He just like didn't act in a way that seemed nefarious. He was just like, hey, by the way, he or she was like, hey, this can be done and we're doing it now. And it was kind of a way to like push Monero, like, hey, address this issue. It's a fucking problem now. And through their action of Mordinals and proving how easy this actually was, that caused a rapid response in Monero. And the way that this quote unquote attack has unfolded, I mean, it kind of makes me, cause think about it. They reduced the Ruckneum's research showed that maybe we reduced to about 5.5 ring sizes of 5.5 effectively, like assuming that this was a chain analysis attack. Mm-hmm. But we still had, like, you still had 5.5 decoys effectively, even during, you know, the heights of the attack. And then this thing drops off. It's like, okay, well, so it dropped back to baseline for a period of a couple weeks. And then, you know, now it's coming back up. And in the process of doing that, exposed some things in Monero that really needed to be fixed if it's going to scale. If this was really chain analysis, they would have just kept the transactions high, and they probably would have pushed them even higher.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it just seems to me, it just smells like someone kind of either a neutral or a good entity out there saying, hey, fix the problems. Here's a stress test. Here's a proof of concept, not concept, but like, here's how the dynamic blocks function. Here's, you know, all the other stuff that we're discovering.
Analysis, I mean, they would be smart enough to ramp it up slowly, make it look more natural, not so sudden, to where it's like, it's obvious something's going on. Because they could have ramped it up naturally. We just would have been like, oh, wow, more people are using Monero. It's getting thousands of these transactions are just. But then another big indicator is that they're using the minimum fee. So also, if it was like a smarter adversary, they would take the extra money to make them look more
natural.
Like it natural, yeah.
Yeah, they do. They would probably take a distribution of the different fees and the different outputs and try and mimic, you know, what the chain actually has been showing. Yeah, I mean, the adversaries out there, the chain analysis adversaries are definitely fairly advanced. It used to be the case back in the day, like with crypto volumes, they would just blatantly inflate their volumes, and you could run the statistical analysis like on the last digit, stuff like that. Like the stuff they'll do with taxes, like they'll check your returns and check your first and last digit or something like that, and make sure that your distribution is correct, like what it should be. And that's one of the ways that they'll find people that are cheating. And they used to do that with volumes, and people used to detect, hey, you're lying about your volumes, and we know because you don't have a proper statistical distribution on like these different things. And now I'm sure they've gotten more sophisticated about that. So, just kind of like in a long-winded way, backing that, what you're saying there, Tux, like these guys, if they really, really wanted to pwn Monero's privacy by revealing the decoys, you would expect them to ramp it slowly and then mimic the transaction scenario. Cause they've got more than enough funds to do that if they wanted to. So, I also tend to think these are problems that go away with adoption. Like if we have 100,000, half a million transactions a day organically, suddenly it's a lot harder to overcome, it's a lot harder to overcome that, to spam the network without incurring significant fees and without, it's harder to remove the decoys, cause you have to do so many more transactions. I feel like those are kind of problems that largely alleviate with adoption.
And then, of course, full chain membership proofs, that's going to be a huge deterrence against the ability to do these black marble attacks.
Yeah. I am still slightly, is it a 5x increase on the transaction size? I think it's about a 5x increase.
No, it's not a 5x. Well, actually, you might be right.
Maybe there's efficiencies to be found, but it is pretty significant, which actually I'm pretty sure puts us somewhere in the neighborhood of Zcash transaction sizes at this point.
So I remember correctly right now, about 1 kilobyte, couple kilobytes for larger ones. And then full chain membership proofs might bring that up to 8 to 10. I remember what Luke was saying. So yeah,
those are the numbers I read. I think it's 2.1 was the average transaction size a couple years ago, 2.1 kilobytes. Maybe we should take a look at gold here, guys. Gold has been performing. Probably there's people in the audience that hold gold.
Gold like crazy.
Yeah, it's actually, crazy for gold. We could take a look. My God, 20% to the upside, which is more than Monero gets these days. So
it's kind of sad.
Yeah. We got the monthly chart here on gold. Things are moving towards the upside. At this point, it seems like it would make sense to tag this upper line here. You'll notice that this upper line goes way, way back all the way to 1980 when that first massive gold pump happened after they demonetized it. Which is weird, you know, it took like a whole decade really, to get that pump. Like the major pump started, you can see here in 1971, they severed the, you know, gold will float, said gold will float relative to other currencies, as a temporary measure against the speculators, in the voice of Nixon. And then it took an entire decade to really like blow off top, to the upside. But you'll notice that's where we draw our first pleb line here. And we have two connected pleb line points. And it certainly looks like we're headed that direction. Interestingly, this would maybe suggest that we could get another break of this very, very large rising resistance. And it's difficult to believe that in an inflationary environment such as we are in, where stocks and crypto and risk assets just go crazy, and gold is still kind of like lagging behind. I really have to think that on a long time frame, you'll notice here down at the bottom, that's 2030. So on a long time frame, I really do have to think that this line is going to break. I guess 2030 is getting closer every day, right? Just six more years, maybe five and a half more years until we're basically at 2030. So anyways, yeah, I mean, I would expect this thing to probably eventually tag this upper line to have some pullback. Yeah, so, I mean, it's nice. You know, I've been saving in gold, like I've said, for a long time. It's stable. It should hold its value. Gold is actually a store of value. Gold is a real store of value. An asset that drops 80% is not a store of value. Like, I'm sorry.
Bro, but Bitcoin is digital gold, man.
Oh, shit. You mean I can melt my Bitcoin and it's all the same and fungible? Nope.
Yeah.
It's fungible enough, bro, because the government said so. Here's an interesting chart that, I've showed you guys in the past. This is gold times the dollar index. Gold is basically anti-correlated with the dollar index. So if the dollar index is going up and gold is going up at the same time, that actually means gold is going up even more than you would think. So it's interesting because this chart in a lot of ways was actually much cleaner. One thing that you'll notice is that we're kind of coming to the top of these purple lines here. Let me draw that. I don't know if you can see it. Right there would be about the top of the purple lines, which would be... There's got to be a quick key that I can switch from drawing lines to not drawing lines. Anyways, that would be something like another 12% up. Let's compare that here. Can you guys tell I didn't like really not super prepared? Yeah, that would be another 12% up. I would probably be looking for gold to top out here somewhere in the range of like 2600. Does that mean I'll sell? I don't know. Maybe I might sell and like buy something real, like a house or an airplane or something like that. I really need an airplane. It would have been nice to go fly to the eclipse in my own airplane. Which, you know, cause I can't rent any planes here in Mexico. My US license and I know I'm going to get a lot of hate here in the comments because I have a license, which is like asking for permission. Yeah. I mean, hey guys, it is what it is. What are you going to do?
You're flying an airplane, right?
You're under duress.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe in training though. Like I don't believe in licenses, but I do believe in training. And the simple fact is, to get the license, like you would be shocked at how low the level that you need to get a pilot's license. Like as I was passing my exam and they were, you know, they said I did like really well. I was like, are you kidding me? Like I barely feel competent, like to be flying myself around. Like, yes, I'm competent. I'm fine with it. But man, I could see my skill gap to my trainers, to my instructors. I could see that skill gap. And I was just like, geez, like if you can't pass the FAA exam, like you should not be flying an airplane, period. Like that is the bare minimum. Anyway, so I don't believe in licenses, but I do believe in training and I do believe in competency, especially in a dangerous environment. Anyways, maybe I'll see if I can buy an airplane.
So new gold floor 2K, you think?
Gold never will ever fall below against 2343. This is the bottom. No, I don't know. probably floor 2000 is probably about right. Like this line right here, this pleb line, we will probably never go below that again. That will probably end up being, there will be some pullback at some point and maybe this will be the line that it comes back down to. So like 2100.
I mean, with the US gov adding 3 more trillion to the government budget on a whim, you know, that's not likely to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, what would that be? 20% of the market cap of gold just got added, you know, in the last few years. Let's take a look at gold versus silver. Cause you know, when gold starts performing and people are convinced that gold is doing good, silver should perform. And that's kind of what we see here. Let's go to a shorter time frame. Maybe we'll look at the weekly. So this is gold divided by silver. So when this chart goes up, that means gold is performing better than silver. When it goes down, that means silver's winning. And you'll notice, you know, as of late, we've had silver, has been outperforming gold to the tune of about 10%. I got burned back in the day with silver, so I just kind of ended up sticking with gold.
It seems like silver's kind of, do you think silver's been suppressed?
Probably, yeah. I mean, it truly is. If you think about it, like gold is the store of value. It's like what Bitcoiners talk about, the store of value. But no one really wants to use it that much. But silver is actually the medium of exchange in a lot of ways because it's, you know, it's money for the people, money for the plebs. And they demonetize silver. And I think that I don't think that they want silver to have a high price. I don't think they want people to feel like they can use it in a monetary capacity. That and we need silver for all of our electronics. So the monetary use case of silver definitely competes with the industrial use case. And we really, really do need silver.
I mean, I know gold is still more valuable for electronics because of its corrosion resistance and its resistance to rust. But like still like $2,000 compared to $28 an ounce kind of difference. No, definitely not in terms of usability, I feel like, in electronics.
Yeah, we could look at maybe, let's go to like very long time frames here, maybe 3 month chart. I'll turn off the Wave Magic. Yeah, so here, this is like the lifetime gold versus silver chart. You'll notice, so back in like 1939, we were about these same levels, you know, 100 to 1. We're still pretty high up there, 84 to 1, right? So every ounce of silver, or sorry, every ounce of gold is worth 84 ounces of silver as of today. And you'll notice that with the 2020 spike, the 2020 events, we saw gold massively, massively spike up. Honestly, that's kind of one thing I'm waiting for. Like, it's another thing that if you get this tail risk event, and again, a tail risk event meaning that a very low likelihood event that has severe effects. So in terms of markets, when we say tail risk, what we mean is that the risk of the S&P crashing 50%, right? The risk of another 2008, another March 2020 event where everything just smashes to the downside, right? Very low chance of it happening, but very high consequence of it happening. That's a tail risk event. During tail risk events, gold massively outperforms silver, typically, like you'll notice here. That was an overperformance of 50%. But in the middle of that tail risk event, at the depths of it, that's when you switch from gold into silver. But why would you do that? You should just switch from gold and silver into stocks. But why would you do that? You should just switch from stocks into crypto, right? Like, as long as it's game on, you might as well just go high beta, like all the way, like just smash the high risk buy button. But anyways, yeah, historically speaking, really gold to silver ratio should be closer to around like 40 to 1. So gold is probably overvalued relative to silver by about 2x from a historical standpoint. Right? So that's just one way of looking at it. We'll take a look at gold versus the NASDAQ. That's an interesting chart that we haven't really looked at. These are the monthly candles, so you'll notice very long time frames. I mean, basically from that top in 1980 when gold was just super, super valuable, you'll notice that it just with the tech stocks and everything coming into view during the 80s and during the 90s, man, you just massive, massive, massive underperformance of gold relative to stocks. You had the decade of the aughts, right, from 2000 basically to 2011. Gold had a massive performance to the upside. And then again, since then, right, since the zero interest rate environment and the quantitative easing environment that the Fed has had, we just had massive, just a down for gold. It seems kind of like we're bottoming out here. Gold does seem to be bottoming out relative to the S&P. You know, is this the time? Is this when gold finally breaks to the upside? Can we get ourselves, you know, 100% gain relative to the S&P? Man, I'd hope so. I'd like to see that. It seems like it's due. It seems like it's overdue. But you know, there's no guarantees there. That might not necessarily happen. Again, the forces, and if you wanted to say the principalities for those that speak like that, you know, the forces and principalities we're fighting against, they are quite nefarious and they are quite wily, quite tricky. They got all kinds of tricks up there. Okay. So these are the Z scores on relative metals. So you'll notice that's gold, silver, copper, nickel, platinum, and aluminum in the different colors here. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. Figured I'd show you guys this chart. I've had this for a while. One trading thing I've had for a long time that I've never implemented because it would require me to be on the more traditional markets, you know, with the custodians and the KYC and all that shit. You'll notice that a lot of these metals, they go in turns, like in different turns. Like you'll see a bunch of the metals pump, and like, so nickel here recently, nickel in red, had kind of come down. Like it was down, even as the rest of the metals were pumping. There would have been an opportunity here to get into nickel for a pretty high likelihood upside trade, just by looking at what the rest of the metal Z scores were doing. I don't know. That's some ideas if anyone out there trades metals, in a broader sense, you know, platinum and copper and all this different stuff. Hit me up if you want the Z score script. I'll send it your way. Okay, let's take a quick look at macro stuff and then we'll call it a day. Been a little bit long here in the tooth. We got the reverse repos. We had a little spike there temporarily coming back down. Again, as long as these have juice, mana to give, the markets should still make higher highs, I would think. Right now, as of Friday, we had overall more money come out of the reverse repo. So just because things have fallen out of their trend doesn't mean that they're not going to set another all-time high. Like the stock market could easily still set another all-time high, even if we're in like a months-long topping kind of pattern here, which I'm not necessarily saying, but I mean, I am suspicious, right, of how fast things have gone up. But then again, with all the inflation, right, hard to say. Dixie was another one. Dixie actually is starting to become slightly relevant again. It's gone kind of an upswing here. You'll notice that we touched those upper standard deviations, the near term, the local upper standard deviations, pulled back, touched them again. And now, Dixie, to me, it looks like it probably wants to make it up here, right? It wants to make it to these even more long-term upper standard deviations. So for as long as that's happening, we could probably expect a little bit of friction in the risk assets, right? Crypto and stocks. We could probably expect some friction here until this thing finds some top, maybe pulls back for a little bit. And then maybe we'd start looking, maybe Bitcoin hits 80K. Again, right? That's like, it's all speculative. I'm just saying, hey, this is the way things might unfold. If they unfold in certain ways, you start saying, okay, we have charts, congruencies lining up. I would hope that in a big macro reversal of crypto and stocks, that just like we saw at the beginning or the end of 2022 and the beginning of 2023, where we said, hey, all of these different macro signals are starting to line up. Everything is changing. You can see the shifts happening, right? You can see that there's a reversal coming, a big reversal for upside. I would hope that we would see something similar and we'd be able to corroborate all these charts together in a way that that really makes sense, right? In a way that's coherent if we start seeing some kind of topping action in the market. I still say that we're not there. I still say that there's probably room to go. I'm just some dude speculating on price, right? So I could be wrong. And I'm not, I'm not like hardcore in markets and charts like I used to be back in 2021, 22, and the beginning of 2023. I just, working on some other projects. I still pay attention to markets every day, but I am not like hardcore eating, living, breathing, sleeping this stuff like I did for a couple years. So just want you guys to be aware of that. Okay. Bonds. Nothing's happening with bonds. They're kind of moving up. If you like to buy bonds, maybe you could buy some bonds here because they're like almost at 5% now. But nothing dangerous happening here. So again, overall to me, the picture still looks, flat, right? It just looks like consolidation with the potential to make some higher highs here, going into the future. That doesn't mean mad gains necessarily, although if you choose the right coins, you can get a 2x, 3x, 4x bump here and there. If you are so inclined to do so. So with that, I think that's about all I got. That's all I got to say about that. Oh, wait, no. One more thing. Sorry. One more thing.
Oh, he's got one more.
Encore. One more, speculation. Gox has been repaying the cash, to people. They haven't been repaying the crypto, the Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, but for like the past, I think about month, Gox has two things they owe people. One is fiat and one is crypto. They have been repaying the fiat. I think they're like maybe halfway there. It's hard to say because all we get are, like these little polls on Reddit, like the Mt. Gox rehabilitation or Mt. Gox insolvency subreddit. Like they'll put little polls up. Have you gotten repaid? And it seems like it's about half and half right now. So just know that, Gox is actually repaying people and apparently the crypto portion is coming. How long? I don't know. But, yeah, that's just a small little piece of information there. And now for real though, I don't have. Till next week.
All righty, man. Comprehensive as always. Thank you, buddy. That was fantastic.
Sure thing.
Riddled with many insights beyond price. Let's keep it moving. What do we got? Oh, we have a dev report, right?
We do. We do have a dev report next. I will go ahead and bring that up. Thanks as always, buddy.
Yeah, thanks,
guys. Let's do that. Yeah, please stick around if you can, buddy. We might be talking about that Gammon thing in a little bit. George Gammon thing. The viewers on stage first. We have a dev report. I don't know how long it is. Do we know?
It's about 15 minutes. It's just a video. I'll pull it up. All right.
And now for the Monero development segment.
Oh no, that's not a good sign.
What happened?
The video.
What?
It was encoded in H.265. Apparently my browser doesn't support it, so it's not letting me
No.
Well, I can convert it real fast. Not a problem for me. It'll just take a couple minutes.
We could also just post it as a dev report separately.
Up to you, sir.
How much work is it on your end?
Well, let's see. I'm about to start rendering right now. Here to file. It will be done in 1 minute and 30 seconds.
All right. Let's make it official. We got to include it in the episode.
Normally I would have tested the video out before the stream, but I was late to that. So
these Monerotopias, man, we cover a lot. We really do.
We don't have a guest this time. How about while it's rendering, I'll run the guest segment for the sponsor.
Okay. Let's do that. We can make today's guest an XMR Bazaar sneak peek. So there I'll do go. That real quick. Go ahead.
The Monerotopia guest segment is sponsored by CakeWallet. Store, send, receive, and exchange your Monero and Bitcoin safely on iOS and Android too. CakeWallet is open source, and you always control your own keys.
Alrighty. Today's special guest is XMR Bazaar.
Very smooth.
Tux, have you checked it out recently?
I have not logged into this yet.
Dude, it is. Anarchio has done amazing things. He's brought it to life. We're not there 100% yet, but guys, sneak peek. This is what XMR Bazaar is going to look like. It's going to have a spend section and an earn section. So this is where you go to see all the different listings where you can spend Monero, whether it's buying a digital good. I was checking that out. He's
Cat Ping Pong video. Oh, that's a good one.
Very cool how he implemented this. So like very super simple for people to do digital downloads. Buy now.
Direct payment to Solar's wallet. Cool. Very nice. Yeah, and no escrow for that one because it just gets order. It straight to you.
Right. So you'd effectively be able to send your Monero payment here. And then you put proof that you sent it with the transaction ID. Mark is paid and you'll be able to download your digital good instantly.
That's
very,
awesome.
Very, very
that's the
cool
perfect way to do that.
Yeah. And then there's other type of spends is obviously. So there's what kind of the, right. So we have things for sale, right? So that's things like digital goods or maybe somebody's selling something physical they want to send you for hire, right? So it's where people can post jobs or where they would post. This is the spend section, right? So this could be where consultants would post their skills if you want to come here to hire them, to find somebody that you want to hire for some type of job, whether it's, you know, web development, or it could even be people, I'm hoping people start to use it for like local, real world physical things as well, right? Like I'll be putting posts here for hire. Or no, it would be under the earn, right? The earn section, is where I'll be doing a lot of posts. So this is where you'd go to, if you're looking to earn Monero, so to fulfill services that people are posting for. So kind of like wanted ads. So, from day one, I'll be putting up a lot of earn posts here with the hopes of finding people that want to come earn Monero for certain tasks. These are the basic concepts, but it's all coming together. It's built in. I haven't even really seen everything yet. He's made it super, super slick way to message people using, encrypted messenger. There's a whole setup process for setting it up and having your key. And then there's the whole multi-sig wallet feature for making purchases where you want to use escrow. I haven't even really tried that out. From when we first tested it before it was actually implemented in the website. So I got to give that a test. But guys, that's XMR Bazaar. If you want to help us test it out, be one of the early adopters, join the chat. Tux, where do we have the chat? It's just, how do people most easily find that chat room?
It's on Matrix, and it's in the Monero.social home server. So if you search on your Element or whatever other client, if you search for channel and you make sure that it's public spaces and Monero.social selected, it'll show up. But I can also put the link to this in the description.
Yeah, throw it in there. I think we got like 30 people in that room. I haven't been engaging much in there, but now I will, because what we'll start doing now is bringing in other people to test it. Fiat Demise has done a great job helping us out with testing. But I'm thinking at this point, Tux, what do you think? If we just let everybody kind of access and test, right, before we move it over and actually launch it, you just get a bunch of people.
Yeah, that'd be the way to do it.
Yeah, a bunch of people will just put it out there so anybody can, we'll give you the login, and then you could test from square one, do test creating accounts, logging in and doing posts, putting posts up, sending messages, coordinating with other people in the chat room to escrow transactions so we could test all that, and then we'll launch it. We'll go live. We'll go put it at xmrbazaar.com and launch the beta. So yeah, guys, please come to that chat room if you want to help be a tester before we officially launch it. Cool. All right.
Let's see if the dev report view will work this time.
Hey guys, welcome to the dev report. We are starting with plugging a pool for Tari.
Yes. Okay.
Tari has no pool mining yet. As far as I know, you can only solo mine or merge mine with Monero. And Luis is building a pool with a random X based miner written in Rust. Yes, and I think he's very early in state, but he says he's learning a lot. And yes, what a nice project. Let's keep an eye on it. The next thing is a CCS proposal from Luke Parker, aka Kabaya Nerd, and he just posted it 7 hours ago. He's asking for 3,000 XMR for full chain membership plus spend authorization plus linkability CCS. So I already looked through the milestones, and I'm honest with you guys, I'm not really understanding much of the things. I think this here is very interesting. We're coming to GPs in a moment, but he's also writing here. This CCS is to develop, prove, review, and audit full chain membership proofs, which is a trustless solution based on generalized bulletproof, the BP, into Monero under RingCT, replacing the existing CLSEG. This is distinct from prior intents to integrate full chain membership proofs into Monero with Seraphis, and was prior discussed in a Monero Research Lab meeting with Well Reception. The same meeting organized the funding of security proofs for generalized bulletproof, which has been funded in under 24 hours. A critical component of full chain membership proofs. This builds upon the work prior done on full chain membership proofs and does the most of the groundwork for full chain membership proofs and Seraphis as well. So I really like to see that we have a lot of movement in development for Monero again. We are going to a phase where full chain membership proofs and Seraphis are going to start the implementation soon, I guess. I mean, I can't say anything about the timeline, but yeah, it's going from talking about it to working on it. Okay, so we even have another new awesome Monero guided list. I think it's the third one, and yeah, this one. Oh, guys, I think, is this a fork of mine? It looks very much like mine, which I have released a few weeks ago. Maybe it's a fork and not marked as a fork. That's funny. Okay, so the next thing I saw here on X is Shadow Strike, a Monero to Bitcoin Lightning payment service. Load up your Tor browser and try it out. Go as low as you want. Top limit of 0.25 XMR for zero conf transactions. So I opened up the website on the Tor network, and I haven't tried it, but you can pay any Bitcoin Lightning invoice with Monero up to that limit. And yeah, we should keep an eye on it and try it out someday. So Feather Wallet had the release 2.6.5. Just want to mention that they updated to Monero 0.18.3.3 and they fixed some bugs. The next thing is really cool. My friend Alex is hosting a Monero meetup in Offenbach on the 18th of April this year, and this will mark the 10th birthday of Monero. And he's hosting this in a office, and they have some screens, and we have several Monero art, and it's raining Monero coins from the sky. And this is made by a program Alex has programmed. He has made up a repo. It's called the Monero Anniversary Mini Phaser Game, and it makes rain the coins from the sky when a Monero transaction is received. So I guess there will be something like a QR code on the screen, and when you scan it and send some XMR, you can make it rain. So you support the you support the organization of these events, which is really nice. Check out Mona Roof. I hope to see you guys there. I will be there as well. So the next thing is the Haveno 1.0 release. And I haven't seen any announcement from Haveno, but I saw this release on GitHub. And yes, with a 1.0, usually you are going mainnet and you're going production. I'm not sure if this is the case here. The release notes don't show that Haveno has a switch to mainnet, but it's a big release nonetheless. I'm really excited for Haveno because it has fiat trading pairs with Monero, and we just saw that Kraken will delist Monero in Belgium and Ireland, I guess. Belgium and Ireland. These are two countries in the EU, and I guess we're going to see a delist of Monero on Kraken for all EU countries. So Haveno is the most important project for me related to Monero. Next, we are seeing a new release of libmonero, which is a Rust library for Monero. This is interesting for developers, and I think there are two or even three different Rust libraries for Monero. But yeah, check them out. The next thing is Monero subscriptions wallet from Luke Profits, and this is really interesting. So normal Monero wallets or cryptocurrency wallets, they lack a feature of fiat banking, which is really common. And this is subscription payments or payments that occur in a time frame, like every 2 weeks or once a month. And with cryptocurrencies, if you are using non-custodial wallets, you always have to do a transaction by yourself and you cannot automate the process. So this is multiple things. First, he has made a payment request standard, a own protocol, which encodes multiple information into a string. Not sure is here. Like, it looks like this. It starts with Monero request column, and then multiple other parameters that are encoded in here. And his software can decode this. So let's say you're a merchant, and then you generate this request, and then you send this to your customer, and then the customer can use this subscription wallet, which are some files that you have to copy into your wallet folder with the other files from Monero CLI, and then you can run a launcher for Windows or Mac or Linux, and then you can have those payments. I can show you some screenshots. It looks like this. Then you can confirm or cancel the request. And yeah, I don't know how it works. I know some part has to be online. I'm not sure if it's on the part of the merchant or of the customer. I have to look more into detail into this project. So the next project is Niveco, which has released a new beta. As a reminder, this is going to be a decentralized anonymous on a market, like a invisible economy. This is what this stands for. And it's built on I2P. I already covered this, and let's see what the new release gives us. So it's Linux only, and it has a release server on the I2P net, which is interesting. I'm not sure what it means, but Yeah, darknet markets in the dark web always have the problem that either they are exit scamming or they are getting busted by the police. But something like this is untraceable and not confiscatable. So I wanted to share you the current distribution of Monero mining and the pools, and it doesn't look very good, guys. We are seeing two pools who are consuming 70% of the total hash rate. If those two pools would censor some blocks together, they could achieve that Monero will mine empty blocks and no transaction would get into those blocks. It's not as bad as in Bitcoin or other transparent blockchains where you cannot, where you can distinguish transactions and the sender and the receiver and then censor specific transactions. This is not really possible with Monero, but yeah. People should really use P2Pool, which has only 7% of the total hash rate. P2Pool is a decentralized pool and everybody should host an own instance of it and use it as their miner, which is even more profitable than any other centralized pool which has fees. P2Pool is without fees. And if you want to use P2Pool in a very easy way, you could always use GooPax. But I found something new, which is a fork of GooPax, which is named GooPax with 2x. And they forked it and integrated the XMR versus Beast raffle. So I know what it is from a time ago, but I forgot about it. This is a bonus hash rate raffle. And I don't know who is running this. I don't know why this is running, but I guess maybe it's like a incentive to use P2Pool instead of other pools. And if you participate here, you can even earn more Monero. Because some other generous miner will jump on your address and mine for you for some time. Then you can gain some Monero. And the hash rates here, they are really, really high. Over 7 or 8 mega hashes per second. So it will give you a big bonus. And you can donate yourself or you can participate. You just have to put in your XMR address, which is also used on your P2Pool instance. And now it's easier than ever with GooPax with 2x. They have integrated the raffle into the GUI. So now you don't have to set up anything. You just open this. You're going to sync P2Pool, start mining, and participate in the raffle. And you can even earn more Monero. Yeah, that's it for this week. I thank you all for listening and have a nice day and come to our Monero meetup in Offenbach on the 18th of April.
Moving on.
It's the Viewers on Stage segment. It's that time where we invite you, the viewers, up on stage to comment on anything you've heard so far today, ask the guest a question, or maybe talk about one of the news topics. Come on down.
All right, guys. You know the drill. Get you all up here, everyone. Body, you want to come up here? Let me know. Bring everyone else up.
All right, so a couple of things real quick.
Yeah, sorry. I know we didn't bring up the bounty polyseed for Monerujo, 1.78 Monero.
Yeah, if you can, donate to that. That person, I was actually talking with them on the Monero Matrix channel, and they say they're looking for 3.5 Monero to do the work. So once that hits 3.5, they said they'll do the work.
Oh, the bounty needs 3.5, is that what you said?
Well, there is no way of like putting a goal in on bounties Monero Social, but the person has directly told me that they will do it once it hits 3.5.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. That would be great, because it would be nice, because one of the things that's a little bit annoying is that, I mean, I like this part. Cake Wallet has Polyseed, but the only other wallet that actually supports that is Feather. So
Feather. Because the Monero like GUI and CLI don't yet. And
yeah, which is interesting. I'm surprised those don't yet. So it's nice to see other wallets have Polyseed support.
And Onero does too.
I think MySu might,
but I'm not sure. So that, and the other thing I was going to say is that I bought Goldbacks in November to give as Christmas presents, and I kept a couple for myself when I was done, and they have went up 27% in 5 months.
That's crazy. Oh, yeah, wow. Goldbacks were like, wow. One Goldback was like $4 last year, and now it's $5.
Yeah, I got them for $3.97.
The price of gold, right?
Yep. Hey, Shortwave, can you mind linking that again, that bounty? Someone's asking for it in the comments.
I can link it in the private chat, but I don't have the email, so I cannot.
That's okay. I'll post it back into the comments if you can link it to me in the private chat.
Yeah, so, all of the goldbacks I had before my boating accident, I think I started buying them at like 230 or something like that. The reality is it's a market case study for fungibility, right? Because they can go to such low denominations and they're so fungible and so, I mean, they are the physical Monero, if you think about it. And they've demonstrated that they actually retain and grow their market value faster than gold itself. Because people who start getting interested in gold as currency, they instinctively recognize the value of the fungibility, denominability. I'm going to use it whether it's a word or not. So there you go, people. If people aren't holding goldbacks, whenever I start talking about either one, I try to talk about Monero and goldbacks as though they're basically two sides of the same thing. One begins where the other ends and so on, because the endless search for a way to trade Monero as like a bill, I don't think that problem even needs to be solved. I think people need to basically decide. Go ahead.
What about constitutional silver?
Oh, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's great. I think that goldbacks have a certain marketing potential. Actually, I have one that I didn't lose in the boating accident. I'll grab it real quick.
Yeah, those things are works of art. Like, I know that the gold in them is, like, undervalued. Like, the gold back, theoretically, if it was just the gold content, should be trading, you know, like $2.30 or whatever. Like, whatever the price of actual gold is, one-to-one.
Here we go. Last one I've got one. It's pretty slick.
But
they're very shiny.
But the gold backs are trading for $5, which says that it's not just the value of the gold that's in it that's trading. It's the recognizability, the usefulness. You can take it and put it in a wallet and go spend it somewhere. It's the artistry and it's the useful.
The rarity of the one that you have too.
Before we deviate anywhere from this, I actually wanted to bring up goldbacks in terms of XMR Bazaar. Will be people, I can validate this person.
I've been talking about this. Go ahead.
There will be people who will offer on Bazaar liquidity to get in and out of Monero for goldbacks at a very small fee. But then the other thing, because I didn't want to just talk about it. I'm glad it came up in the show. But one thing that will pull people that know nothing about, see, Doug also managed to keep some of his from the
just a few. These were purchased with Monero, by the way.
Yeah, it's they are wonderful, wonderful. Yeah,
that's a 50.
If anyone's looking to get into them, make sure you first have enough ones and fives. But then if you're going to start using them to store value, once you have your liquidity needs covered with the ones and the fives, even though you spend a little bit more, then it's great to have lots of.
Yeah, I keep running out because I actually give them to people and I give them to people too.
Great. So like when I tip somebody and then I'm like, you know what? Do you ever see one of these?
I do want to show this website briefly. I bought some a couple weeks ago when it was at like $4.30. Per one gold back. But MoneroMetals.com, you can buy gold backs directly from Monero here. Of course, on XMR Bazaar, when that's open, you'll be able to buy them there. Also, there'll be people.
I bought mine in Monero as well. And I was actually on MoneroMarket.io is where I got mine back in November.
Yeah, this guy sells the same. Beautiful. exact same listing with the same price on their market that IO2. But I mean, they've gone up. They've gone up in price. So like a pack of 20, now $94. It was like a couple weeks ago.
But there was one thing that I wanted to bring up about XMR Bazaar real quick.
Yeah, go ahead. And then I want to make a follow-up point. Go ahead.
Yeah, so not only do we want to try to have liquidity like these other guys are, so people can get in and out of XMR with real physical money, but my wife had – so you guys probably won't recognize this, but these – so, and the reason why I'm bringing it up, even though it takes a little bit of explanation, I hope that people pay attention here. So the Esperanto community has a very popular kids show for teaching kids about, Esperanto. And it's a show called Mazi. And this is Mazi with one of his faces. And then this is Mazi with another one of his faces. And then there's going to be like a little treasure chest with clocks because Mazi eats clocks in the show. He loves to eat clocks. But the idea is you post the listing on XMR Bazaar and then you direct people on whatever social media or like if it's like a Reddit community or whatever, you can get these on XMR Bazaar. But the what I'm getting at is nobody makes these, right? She had to get a custom tailor to help design it and make it and all that. I think she could probably do it now because she went and learned how. But the point is you get like a cultural niche where people are looking for something and they'll never be able to find it. And then you put it on XMR Bazaar, but you make sure that people from the community know that if you want to get this, you have to go to XMR Bazaar. And then if people are like, well, I don't have any Monero and I can't buy it on an exchange. Now you've got your gateway into talking about Monero not being on exchanges. You can even say, well, look, there's people on XMR Bazaar that are looking for this thing or that thing. You could just post it and then turn around with the Monero and get the... But you use it to try to bring in little niche groups into the platform because you're going to get a high... So in sales, the concept is there are certain places with high turnover for getting a customer, right? If you cold call, you're going to get, you know, one sale out of 50. But if you're answering phone calls looking for your service, you'll get like 4 out of 5, right? It's the same thing. If somebody is already actively looking to purchase something, then you're going to have a higher likelihood of them getting into the Monero community. And their journey into Monero is going to help them understand the value of Monero. And now you're creating a person who within their community, oh, how did you get that Mazi plushie? Well, I bought it for Monero on Monero XMR Bazaar. Oh, what's Monero? How do I get Monero? Well, I can get some for you now, but this is how I got mine. And so, and it's the fastest path to a circular economy adoption that I can think of. So that's my little 2 cent rant on all of that.
Awesome, man. Awesome. I wanted to, what do you think of this idea? I think I had pitched it on here, but I know I was definitely talking to people about it in the chat room. But with regarding adding gold backs. So in addition to people using XMR Bazaar as a way to buy and sell things for Monero, gold backs being one of those things, right? In addition to that, making XMR Bazaar a place where people can sell things for Monero or for gold backs, right? So gold backs becomes an additional currency you could add onto XMR Bazaar, additional payment option. And then we use the Monero multisig as a way to secure the payment, right? So people can, let's say I'm selling my motorcycle for gold backs. The person that says, all right, I'm going to send you $10,000 in gold backs can put up that $10,000 in Monero into the escrow. And then only once the gold backs are physically received, does the Monero go back to the sender. I just want to hear people's. Does that make sense? Is what I'm saying making
sense? Yeah, so you that's can basically use Multisig as a liquidity provider,
right? Because if there was a Goldbacks market right now online, I mean, there's that problem with the escrow for sending the Goldbacks, right? But does this become now a way for people to essentially send Goldbacks in the mail for goods and services and using Monero as the escrow?
I want to throw one thing about that you may not have considered. If you think of buy now, pay later options are extremely popular, and Goldbacks are popular within certain communities. And so if somebody is willing to be paid in Goldbacks, but they want their money now, right? The thing is liquidity providers, there's a market for them to get their 1% or 2% by staking is what it basically is. They stake both Monero and Goldbacks, and they can get 1% on their transactions over time. And it's still a better deal than paying with like a Visa, right? And so you're actually generating a money-making opportunity. So somebody could stake Goldbacks and then get their 1% in Monero, or somebody can stake Monero and get their 1% in Goldbacks. You can even use it as a diversification mechanism and all these other things. And if you ever want to see, flies to stink, right? People who are looking for ways to stake their capital and generate more money, this is such a beautiful option available to the market if we can make it work. I mean,
That is exactly why I'm so waiting for Sarai, because I know Monero's inflation is like 0.8%. And if Sarai can get me 1%, then it halts the inflation of Monero completely. So it doesn't matter anymore.
Hey, I wanted to ask a question about the seniorage on the Goldbacks. So seniorage, if I understand the word correctly, it's basically the person that manufactures the coin sells it at a markup so they get some profit in there. So looking at the website you guys pulled up, that showed 1/1000th ounce Goldback, so 10 of those. So basically 1/100th of an ounce of gold cost $50. The current price of gold is $23.43, so that would mean $23.43 of like melt value of the gold there. But they were selling it for like $50. So that's a markup of like basically 2x. So I remember this being something kind of like I did the math quickly in my head last year, but I was like, man, that's kind of a high markup. Are we going to be able to get Goldbacks in circulation with that high of a markup? Like, how many people want to use their Goldbacks as currency when they're only getting 50% on the value that they paid for them?
I have two things to say about that. The first thing is these things are unbelievably durable. I've done tests where I've buried them in concrete, fed them to dogs. My kids play with them all the time. They are unbelievably durable, Goldbacks. But the second thing is the cost of production, which is pretty significant, right? The cost of production is almost deflationary until the transaction volume gets to a certain point, right? But then the other thing is most exchanges right now are done digitally anyway. I want to see Goldbacks as something that underpins Monero transactions and also allows for physical transactions in a place where that might be more ideal. I don't necessarily want to see Goldbacks as just like the be all end all. And the other, here's the clocks, by the way, but I would like to see it where the two are basically synonymous with just being, you know, the means by which people exchange. It's either Monero or Goldbacks, and it's nobody thinks of them differently. But that said, that's precisely the problem with gold, is what Body's bringing up right now. You know, refining it, testing it, making sure that it's real gold. Now, Goldbacks kind of helps with one, but then adds to the other. Right. Where, you know, producing lots of Goldbacks is a serious concern. It's a serious issue. Now, one would expect the price of manufacturing Goldbacks to go down as the demand increases because you'll get economies of scale and so on. But I really think since most transactions are done digitally anyway, Monero is the solution for about 99% of exchanges worldwide. Right. It's just having that physical underpinning kind of alleviates a lot of the concerns that people might have.
Yeah, and another thing is that the goldbacks are holding their value. So it's not like they are fluctuating very much with the price of gold. They are actually holding. As I said, I bought mine 5 months ago, and it goes up and it goes down a little bit. But overall, it has held its value perfectly. So it's not like people aren't willing to spend the money for them at this point. Like, they're not the artistry value and the actual use as a physical currency is keeping them at their premium. So it's not really changing much.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying that, like, if you paid twice the melt value of the gold back, that it's actually keeping, when you resell it, when you use it to buy something, it's actually holding twice that value.
Yes,
it certainly is. People accept them for $5 regularly, at least before the boating accident. I don't know what it is now, because boating act.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's holding it. So if you buy it at 2x today of its melt value, it's still going to be 2x tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Like, it's not going down. So it might always be 2x the melt value of the gold.
Can you, I'm assuming you can just point a spectrometer at this and just like see that it's gold. Like, is it that easy to verify?
We had the goldbacks guy on here a couple of times. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's as simple as that, but go ahead, Alaskan.
So the thing is if you think about what metals could theoretically replicate the luminosity and what plastics could represent the durability, right? I've tried to think of how one would counterfeit these. I seriously think it would cost more to counterfeit them unless you took it to such a huge, and it would have to be the 50, right? The thing is counterfeiting them is pretty much like highly implausible. Everything that I've thought
about. They need like a good app where you can just kind of like scan your gold back and with.
Well, there's only one 1/1000th of an ounce of gold in a single. Spectrum.
Right.
Because body, if you think about it, one of the reasons this works is because you can spread gold so thin and you can't do that with other metals. Mm-hmm. This is 1/1000th of an ounce of gold. So trying to replicate it would be so difficult. You know what I'm saying? Because only gold spreads this thin and has that luminosity.
Right? Yeah. Mike Adams, Health Ranger, did a test on this. He actually melted one down in his kiln, right? He ended up melted it down. First, he burned off all the silicone, the stuff that holds it all together. And then he ended up with a bunch of tinfoil. He melted that into a bead, and he weighed the bead, and it was between 102 and 107 percent, of the stated value. So it was, in all cases, it exceeded the 1/1000th stated value. And he did this on a bunch of, he ruined a bunch of, every type of bill, and he did it statistically. He did quite a few of them, and he's got a program. He released a podcast on that. If you look through his, if you do a search on Goldbacks and Health Ranger, but anyway, it was really interesting. And
that's awesome.
He proved it. He proved that it's real gold. So if you're buying Goldbacks, you're getting real gold. Doesn't matter if the guy dies and had to stop making them, you still got real gold.
They've paid people to independently audit them at random too, and so they've also submitted to third-party testing and all kinds of other stuff like that.
This is one of my favorite topics. You mind if I weigh in? This is Drunk Tommy.
Please do.
So before goldbacks, the smallest unit of tradable gold was the grain. And a goldback is just barely under half of a grain. So imagine carrying around basically gold sand to do transactions with, how big of a pain in the ass that would be. So the premium on the goldbacks is the utility. It's the monetary premium. So it's the divisibility, it's the durability. And someone just alluded to it. To assay gold or silver to make sure it's not like a tungsten bar wrapped in gold, you need a piece of equipment that costs thousands of dollars usually. But as far as saying goldbacks, it would probably not really be worth the cost of doing it, like Alaskanon was saying. But they do have non-destructive testing with spectrometers now that can scan these things. So if you were setting up an ATM, you could have it filtered at that point. And one of the last things, I know I've brought this up before, but there's a basically a credit union or consumer co-op for goldbacks called UPMA, United Precious Metals Association. So it's basically a credit uses real money rather than fiat. And they allow users to zap money back and forth from their accounts. So that might be something worth looking into for XMR Bazaar as well.
Yeah, it's
Drunk Dial, can you re-explain that last thought, what you're saying?
Have talked to the people doing this, if you want me to. So there's actually like a gold advocacy group that the Goldback people and some other people are involved in. I mean, they have a gold-backed credit and debit cards where the money allocated to the card in one way or another is all stored in gold, and you spend out of your gold supply for dollars in real time. There's also a credit union. And the other thing is in Alaska, we have two state licensed banks that are both working right now on, I'm trying to get somebody to take on the Monero Goldback ATM thing. There are Bitcoin ATMs in Alaska, but they're not nearly as popular as they are everywhere else. But Monero ATMs would be unbelievably profitable. And I'm trying to get these banks to take on the same idea. But looking into it, yeah, you can actually tie yourself into a network that stores your assets in gold and allows you to spend out of it in gold. And then you can even take physical delivery in gold backs. They do have a premium for that, but it's not very much. And then they even have IRAs and retirement accounts and everything.
Send links to that in the private chat if you know what services are.
I'll see what I can find here real quick.
I actually have one of those. It's called TrueLink. I think it's Visa, maybe.
Dead air is bad. You can't have dead air.
Incredibly valuable if I can just like spend that out of gold from like a card, because I like having money in gold, but obviously it's not quite as easy to spend. I like goldbacks. So goldbacks are very easy to spend locally.
There's another gold debit card called Glint. They're based out of the UK, I believe. But it's extremely hard to take physical possession of the gold. But you can't technically.
I see. Yeah, if I can't physically take possession of the gold, then I don't know.
The only thing that turns me off in the gold backs is the plastic thing, or else it would be really like perfect. Like, or platinum, imagine. You have like, it's with the highest density. You just leave your house, go to the supermarket, drop something at the cashier's, and she recognizes, yeah, I don't know how much platinum, and that would be great, but that's...
Well, the thing is, Blocker, the reason the goldback thing works the way it does is because of a very unique property of gold specifically. You can spread gold unbelievably thin, and when you hold a single goldback up against the sun will actually shine through it, and you can see the sun through the goldback because it's that thin. Right, you can't do that with other metals, and that's one of the underlying. And that's also what I was getting at about why it's so impossible. Chad, Dad. What's that?
Okay, Chad, Dad.
You like that? But the thing is other metals, and that's one of the reasons why counterfeiting a gold back would be so ridiculously hard, is because only gold does it. It spreads out that way, right? It's so you can make it so thin. And there's all kinds of like spectroscopy equipment that uses like single atom gold lenses and stuff. And they're just using the same premise for making the gold back, where you can spread it so thin and be so accurate with the weights and the measurements. You know, another thing that I would point
out. How do I buy a couple of gold backs here in Germany?
And you can buy them online pretty easy. And you can buy them from Monero pretty easily. What's really cool about goldbacks right now is the way they're managing the politics of goldbacks is amazing. So they're doing things at the state level, and they're doing it with states that are already very pro gold. They're legal tender in a lot of states right now. The thing is, makes me sound like a hypocrite because I'm always talking about politics is dead, don't bother. But then I'm also saying like, yeah, Doug, go get him. And I know there's a lot of back and forth, but the thing is I kind of look at politics like you try to set up a bulwark to buy time, and then you use engineering and technology and stuff like that to make tyranny irrelevant. And then I always talk about how apathy is one of the best defenses against the government. Just they make a rule, just don't care, do it anyway, right? Like, but the thing is goldbacks have been more the people behind goldbacks, including a bunch of people that aren't like necessarily the goldback people, they'll set up like defensive like bulwarks in each state individually, right? And that's one of the reasons why I'm trying to take state banks, because a lot of people always say switch to a co-op. I actually think that a state level private bank is way better than a co-op. And I have my reasons, and that's probably for another, you know, viewers on stage or whatever. But the point
what private bank is better? What?
Yeah. Okay. So in the United States, you can still be licensed as a bank at the state level. So you can have an Alaskan bank operating within the jurisdiction of Alaska. That's a private for-profit company. Okay. And it works way better than a co-op, because one of the things about like, you know, worker-owned companies and all that stuff, most of the time, co-ops are run by people who have zero financial skills or business. And doing anything takes forever. And loaning money takes forever, right? Because they just can't move very fast. They can't make decisions right now. So if you do like a state-level bank and you get those people behind the idea of accepting goldbacks, making goldbacked ATMs, having a functioning profit model, getting them all over the place. But the other thing is they have a lot of leverage within their local government as well, right? So, and the thing is if you do like financial freedom and financial literacy at that level, at the state level, you can create really powerful political tools to protect the people within that state from things all the way to like the CBC or CBDC thing, or, you know, and in Alaska, you have like the PFDs. It's one of the few states that actually makes money, right? South Dakota is one, Wyoming is one. They all have gold backs. Alaska's hopefully going to be next. But it's a place where you can fight and win. Having political battles at a state level, you can win, or at a local level, you can win. That when people just focus on who's the next president and so on, they're playing right into the system.
You go to the bank, then you can buy one of those goldbacks. That reminds me of Fibank in Bulgaria. They sell you 1 ounce of silver for 75 euros, and they buying back. It's like, no, we don't really do it, but I really want to do it, I tell them. And they say, yeah, then it's like 10 euros or something. So they don't really do it.
No, the key is you got to decentralize everything. Decentralize your food production. Decentralize, you know, education. I mean, the only way out of tyranny is decentralization. You know, crypto does a wonderful job of that. Monero does an exceptional job of that. But, you know, we got to take it in every aspect of our life. Decentralize, you know, law enforcement. You know, we don't need, you know, some central authority that can be abused by, you know, one like tiny set of, you know, tyrants at the top.
Cue the I2P Second Amendment rant.
Prancing's getting shut down. I just want to throw a thought out there. We need.
It looks like he's back on now. Prancing, okay. You cut out really bad. Do you want to try again?
Well, I was making a comment about parasite class, because you know if we decentralize, you know the more we decentralize all aspects of our life, I think, you know, that's where we will achieve true liberty. And if that's what, you know, and it's not an American thing only. I mean, America had a good experiment going with the Bill of Rights, but everything after the Bill of Rights, you know, went to hell in a handbasket, right? So, you know, so we've been, you know, we're not following the original Constitution. So if we did, you know, we'd be in much better shape. We'd be a much better example to the world. But unfortunately, we've become, you know, really more of an empire. I'm learning that, you know, we have to go on our own apology tour in a way to, you know, because I mean, supporting sound money is probably our first step, because we're the ones that embolden the Federal Reserve and the petrodollar and all that. So, you know, I'm happy to see all that crumble.
But I didn't understand. In America, you can buy gold backs at the bank or not?
In certain states, in theory, you could. Problem is those banks don't have the liquidity supply of having lots of them. But there are 5 states right now that accept gold and gold backs as like a proper currency. Now, what they'll take it for is not exactly the same as the price to buy it. It's pretty close. But yeah, you can use gold back. I mean, you can use gold to pay your like taxes and stuff in Texas. For example, we're working on that in Alaska right now. But yes, there are many states in the United States that gold backs. Some of them will accept silver. We're trying to make an actual state bank, not like a state licensed bank, but a state bank in Alaska that uses silver as its denominations. So it's still a thing in America. It was dying for a while. It's still law, but it's coming back in a huge way.
Well, I'm really supportive of everything that Alaskanon said, but my experience is the entire financial institution, you know, worldwide, they don't want you anywhere near precious metals or cryptocurrency. They put up with Bitcoin because they couldn't stop it completely, but, you know, and they've co-opted it since then. But, you know, my experience is I went to buy a monster box with a wire transfer from Bank of America, and they held my money for 3 weeks and didn't tell me a thing about, you know, where it was, whether or not I was going to get it back. You know, that's when I, you know, really moved a lot of my money out of, you know, regular banks. That caused me to move to cryptocurrency and precious metals.
So I just want to make sure that people are aware of this. People think, and I mean, if anybody's heard me rant, they know how I feel about these banking cartels, right? But you have to realize that just like futures contracts started out as something that was absolutely vital to the growth of the economy, banks also were at one time, and there still are certain levels where they are vital to the economy. And you have to go back to the 90s to understand how we ended up in the situation that we're in right now. So I'll skip through some things, but anybody who wants to look into this, take some notes. You have to start with things like the savings and loan crisis. Okay. There was a time in the United States where there were thousands and thousands of independent, private, for-profit banks. They had to be solvent at their own level, and they had to be making intelligent investments. And one of the ways that the FDIC was introduced into the system was to protect depositors from banks making bad investments, which I would argue against, because the thing is depositors were the things that were supposed to hold the banks accountable. But they used, you know, collapsing banks and people losing their money and their deposits, which was a tiny fraction of the overall depositor market. But they used it as an excuse to basically get banks on the hook for the government being able to regulate them. But these small independent banks had to make intelligent decisions with depositors' money, where they would invest in the community and they would be looking for the financial viability of their investment. and they would borrow money to people who are likely to become a profitable business, and they would incentivize that business then making deposits into their bank. Okay. And so, and they had to operate at a much larger reserve. So in other words, they had to keep enough money in deposits on reserve to float bad investments. And they also were accountable to their depositors to share the wealth and the interest that was grown. So banks used to serve a very vital purpose way early on, and it worked. But then during the savings and loan crisis, certain powerful banking cartels, mostly surrounding the Federal Reserve, used it to create these banking mega corporations. Citigroup was one of the first ones of these banking cartels. In fact, before it was even legal to have like multiple states as part of your bank, right? It used to be every state had their own jurisdiction, had their own banks. You could only be licensed in your state. And you could, it was very, very difficult to even operate in two different states. You had to just do business with a bank in another state. And that's what prevented a banking monopoly at the consumer and business level. Well, as that died off, these small and medium-sized banks started to get gobbled up. And now a lot of people don't understand that one of the motives behind, you know, forcing small banks to buy bonds in order to meet certain like Basel requirements and so on, and then juicing the price of new bonds, part of that is the purpose of that is to get these last little few banks that are still, you could almost say, on our side and get them into the fold. It's a hostile takeover. Okay. They're leveraging their access to the money printers and leveraging their access to the bond market to basically crush banks that aren't joining the team. Okay. But what we can do, and we actually have more power and authority than the money printers in this case. If you put your deposits in a small local bank and you keep your business accounts at that small local bank, you give them profitable investments. You know your bankers directly, and you get them to slowly get out of the main system and start adopting things like Monero ATMs as a profit model, Goldbacks as a profit model, and so on. They will go where the customer wants them to go. They cannot lead. They have to follow because they have to stay. What's that?
They have to start by exiting the Federal Reserve System.
Well, the thing is they're not allowed to yet. It's legal, but they can't because the problem is their customer base still wants all of this crap. They still want mortgages from the SBC. First time home buyers. They still want business loans from SBC. And so the bank has no choice but to comply. If you get to know these guys, they hate these systems. And it's a huge overhead. They have to have whole teams of people filling out environmental assessment reports and all that. It's killing their overhead. And then the SBC gets the larger share of the interest on the loan. So they're losing in every way, but they have to continue to comply because people keep borrowing too much money. But if smart businesses take their deposits, they take... Because you got to realize these highly leveraged banks, they're highly leveraged to take down the other banks. But that also means if you take your deposits out of the big banks and put them in the small local banks, it hits those large banks 100 or even 1,000-fold the value of your deposit. You may think to yourself, oh, my business only has $12,000 on deposit or whatever. That $12,000 is almost $250,000 of loans that they have to back up with reserves now. Okay. It's like a 10-to-1, 12-to-1 situation. Or when you take physical delivery of silver, when you buy silver instead of SLV, it costs JP Morgan like 10 times the value of the silver that you just pulled out of the market. And what people don't realize is no matter how much money they print, it hurts more if you make smart moves like this. And yes, this Monero circular economy is the goal, but you can kill the banks now if you make smart moves like this. If you go talk to your banker, your local banker who still is even surviving, which by the way, is credit to their financial knowledge.
if a small bank has survived this many attacks so far, then they are a highly well, hold on. I'll just shut up for now.
Chad dad in effect.
So
I just want to say, I just want to throw a thought out there. We tried getting gold backs at Monerotopia last year. Unfortunately, they weren't able to attend, but certainly want to try again this year. It would be amazing to have them integrated into the marketplace at Monerotopia so people can cash in Monero for gold backs and vice versa. Working on that.
Good deal.
Anything else, guys? Is there anybody out there that wants to jump up on stage that's never been on stage? We put the link in there. I'm seeing, you know, a lot of familiar faces, but if anybody else wants to jump up, please do. Anything you're working on, anything you wanted to bring attention to in the Monero space, now's your time. Click that link. You can jump up on stage.
I have an announcement. I'm not a new person, but no one's really mentioned it. I thought I would hear it in the dev report. Javino has just entered basically mainnet testing. They just they're releasing 1.0.0. So they're actually testing mainnet now.
Yeah, no, I think that was mentioned. That was mentioned in the report.
It was in the dev report, and we mentioned it at the beginning of the show.
I missed it.
It's the binaries haven't been released yet, but the actual source code is out if you want to compile it. By the way, somebody's got an echo.
Trunk dial me speaking from his space station.
That might have been me, actually.
Body, I have a question for you. That graph of the reverse repos, I don't understand. Is it crashing to zero soon? And what is that relationship with the treasuries, the world assets, and the dollar, which is the world currency? Thanks.
Yeah, so the reverse repos really came on the scene in 2021. They started rising right around the summer of 2021. What it is institutions putting money with the Federal Reserve overnight. So they're only obligated to keep their funds locked up overnight, and they get basically the federal funds rate. So whatever the federal funds rate is, that's what they get. So my guess is that as institutions knew that the Fed was eventually going to raise rates, to protect themselves from rising rates, they started putting money into the reverse repos. That money has to come from somewhere, right? So it comes from bonds, it comes from stocks, it comes from their other investments. And so it was correlated, and I believe that it was correlated with the bear market, because that was money coming out of these risk assets that had pumped massively on basically on leverage and money printing. And then the stock market started to peak out in 2021. The Fed started talking about raising rates. And so the reverse repos represented money coming out of financials or out of risk assets and going into something safer, where they basically, for zero risk and high liquidity, get to park their money with the Fed overnight. They can take it out anytime they want. But for as long as they do park that money, they get the federal funds rate. It's like the federal funds rate minus 0.1%, something very small. So that was significantly correlated. It was really an early warning sign that we were entering a bear market. And so that peaked out at about $2.5 trillion. And then as that money has come out of reverse repos, that means that money was locked up, not doing anything, and now it can go somewhere. And money tends to seek yield. So the theory here is that as money comes out of the reverse repos, it goes into risk assets. It goes back into those assets that it was previously holding. And I think that that's $2 trillion now that's come out of reverse repos and gone somewhere. I think that's been a significant factor in the bull market that we've seen for the past really about year, almost a year and a half now, right? So like 16 months. And then, you know, the theory is that, or more of a speculative theory on my part here, is that right now there's about $400 billion left in the reverse repo. So again, that's $400 billion of liquidity that could go somewhere. It could get put into risk assets. Once that money is gone, I start asking myself, where is the volume going to come from to pump assets further? I especially ask myself if there are other macro signs that things could be turning towards the negative side, right? Towards the bearish side. If we can corroborate these things together, I might be top calling if I can see, maybe not top calling with perfection, but you know, the general area, hey, this is where we're going to see a reversal and a long-term washout. I really want to see a lot of different things corroborated together, but the reverse repos was a significant item. And it's significant particularly because it's fairly new. I mean, it's existed for a long time, but it just hasn't been used hardly at all until 2021. So that's kind of like the explanation there.
I just was seeing it going down and I didn't really understand what it is. So is this wrong? Like the money was lent from the commercial banks to the Fed and now the Fed is giving that, so to speak, back and the banks are like hot potato, like passing it on risk assets. And do you think, is that a fair assessment or will it go to zero? What does that mean? Thanks.
So the first part, yes, basically you're getting a loan to the Fed and then the Fed reverses that loan and gives it back to you with interest. And it's not just the banks, it's like financial institutions, right? So yes, banks are some of those, but there's other players out there like BlackRock and the companies they hold. But in the second part of the way you characterize it is sort of a hot potato. I probably wouldn't characterize it that way as a hot potato. It's more like it's just that they have investable cash. They have investable money. Like any hedge fund, like any financial institution, they want more. Like all us, right? Who doesn't want to have more money, more spendable cash that you can buy real stuff? So I wouldn't necessarily call it a hot potato. I would just say that it's money seeking the best yield that they think they can get.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, sure thing.
I have sort of a pre-announcement for a Kuno fundraiser. Hopefully that'll happen in the next few weeks. So someone mentioned decentralizing the police. I've been tracking and sort of involved on the sidelines of a project called Cell 411, which used to be an app where you could basically hit an alert on your phone and call up all your homies to come help you if your car breaks on the side of the highway or you're getting mugged, and it would video stream anything happening. So if you felt unsafe walking home in a city or something. It was actually white labeled by a South African security company, but a lot of the old AWS stuff basically started breaking because no one was maintaining it, and then it was taken over, and it's now being completely open sourced. They're gutting all the Amazon AWS stuff out of it and everything else, Google related, all that stuff. But the lead dev, who I'm pretty familiar with, have met him a couple times in person, has just kind of got a team assembled and hired some people to help with the architecture of the thing. And as soon as he gets a roadmap with milestones put together, I'm going to try to get a Kuno fundraiser started to get, you know, kind of motivate him and push him along. So that's kind of interesting, I think.
I've heard of Cell 411, and that's a cool idea, and that's a really good idea to incentivize the development with Monero like that.
I love that.
It's been around for a long time. Yeah, once you do the Kuno, get them up on Monerotopia. We could.
It seems like something like that should ideally be a peer to peer, maybe not like a network, but you know, you connect to the individuals that on your Cell 411 app. You know, like, hey, you're sending packets directly to other people. You're uploading videos directly to other people rather than it being like a centralized controlled server.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's actually what they're gutting everything out of it to rebuild it to do.
Awesome. Shut up and take my money.
Got to support the militia industrial complex.
Well, just remember, police are nothing but gangs in fancy uniforms. That's all they are.
You know, one of the things people don't realize is the only thing police constitutionally have is their citizens' arrest power. There's nothing that a cop can do that a normal person can't do. And a lot of these rulings, like they're under no obligation to X, Y, and Z, come from the fact that they're exercising their citizens' arrest power. And the best way to undermine a public police force in favor of a private police force is to point out that all of the mechanisms for abuse that are being exploited are undermined by a private police force that's volunteer organized. As far as I can tell, the only constitutional law enforcement agency would be things like the U.S. Marshals, a sheriff, and so on. The cops have their origins in the city of New York, putting together a city-funded like citizens arrest militia. And so all of this is rooted in the fact that we can do it ourselves now. There's never been any changes to any state or federal laws that turn it from just the exercise of the citizens arrest power, at least none that I'm aware of, and then create special privileges for the police. It's all like budget related or you know, like how they're managed. It has nothing to do with what actually gives them the authority.
I mean, from a simple logical standpoint, they clearly have no authority there, other than the same authorities we have, which is really just based on rights. The one thing, a legalese perspective, they would say qualified immunity, right? They would say, oh, the Supreme Court has ruled that we have qualified immunity because they're acting in a special position of privilege. You know, the privileges and your 14th Amendment privileges and immunities as a corporate slave citizen. You know, I mean, they wouldn't say it that way. They wouldn't tell you the full extent of what they've done there. But from the perspective of sort of the corporatization of government, the United States is a federal corporation as defined per its own statutes and codes. Yeah, they would say that, oh, well, everyone is a part of this corporation. You all have privileges and immunities. And then the cops have special privileges and immunities like qualified immunity. But no, I mean, in terms of everything else you're saying, like 100%, like to replace the cops with just a private volunteer and or private security teams, like suddenly they don't have that qualified immunity anymore. And all of those abuses go away because they're prosecutable. They're personally criminally liable when they do bad things.
You know, with the construction of a few guillotines too, we can really add to the incentives of, you know, going back to natural law and natural rights.
Somebody sent
careful count. The image, careful commenting
the image I
on
have
that.
On my avatar is isopropanol. And I wanted to say sorry to I2P in a humorous way because he was, and I said, you don't need so many guns. But I think you need, like, perhaps. And then I'm still incineration if you fall from yourself or explosion of yourself after you fall. I'm still divided between those two. But as a Monerian...
This is not legal advice.
Oh, no, it's just like... in the future, when they talk about some possible upstanding of the Monerians, oh no, another Monerian incinerated.
So
one
more
of the things that I always tell people is those who do not own guns should advocate for the Second Amendment extremely strongly, because if the premise of your argument is that somebody who has guns is going on a crazy killing spree, well, guns are the best way to prevent collateral damage.
Because no. Somebody... What I meant is if they come, if they come through the door and going to tell me I'm going to become a Uyghur, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Well, the thing is guns prevent collateral damage, because if some individual, you know, in some remote location decided to go on a killing spree, you know, if they have to use explosives or gas bombs or whatever, then everybody's going down with their enemy. But if they're using guns, then only the targets are going down. So if you consider yourself, you know, a non-threatening individual citizen of your Orwellian nightmare state, well, ideally you would want whoever the target is of the insurgent to be the only person that dies in the interaction.
And no, guns, I was representing the thing of well, this goes into the mining, and that we are data miners and we will shine forevermore. And that's in the context that I said it. And I mean, if you incinerate yourself after you fall, that's the point. Explosions will have collateral damage. I guess incineration is better.
Drunk, you muted yourself in the middle of the sentence. Can you start over?
I was waiting for Drunk Dial me. He was going to say something.
Well, apparently go ahead.
Sorry, I had a bagel in my mouth. Yeah, I was just going to say the Cell 1-1 tool, the app, it does dovetail exactly into the Freedom Cell network and the idea they have with like 8 people per Freedom Cell. Each Freedom Cell can kind of affiliate into a supercell of 8 cells, et cetera. But it's actually perfect for that.
So, hey, Drunk Dalmy, I'm interested in this some more. Is there a place... in somewhere in the Monero community where you might just go like to an off topic room and just drop some links that I might, you know, look into this or drop it in here in the chat somewhere?
Yeah, there's actually a dev channel on Matrix. I can drop that to you. Reach out to me.
So put your, in the private chat, put your Matrix ID and I'll reach out.
Alrighty.
So, somebody mentioned earlier, the fact of, oh dear Lord, train of thought. My bad. Oh, the smallness of government. That's what it was. When they were talking about changing things, laws state by state, that's why I've said that the United States should actually completely break up into 50 different nations, because you can influence things on a state level, because the farthest people are away from you is a couple hundred miles. In D.C., they're thousands of miles away from, say, Californians, who have no control over what's going on. So if their representatives and their state leaders or their country leaders live 200, 300 miles from them, they can get a lot more done a lot easier.
Well, it's also very convenient to have all the power concentrated in one spot for all the special interest groups, which are all the globalists and the billionaires and trillionaires or whatever. I mean, we want to take power away from these people, right? So you got to distribute decentralized power and make it harder for them. They're going to try to corrupt at any level of government. Don't get me wrong. They're always going to be there and try to weasel their way in and try to get their way. But make it hard for them. Make them spread their resources thin. You know, make them go to all 50 states or even more, even down to the county level. You know, force them to go out to the decentralized, government where the power really is or where it should be, out, you know, at the county level or at state level or whatever works best. But we got to push it out decentralized more than it is today, right? Because, we're headed for trouble.
I just want to throw it out there, you guys, and I'll say it for the audience that might be listening that's not familiar. So first, the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So the Ninth Amendment is the Constitution can't be used to limit the rights of the people. And then the second one that I wanted to say is the Tenth Amendment. And this is the big one as a response to what Shortwave was saying. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And so one of the things that I was going to say about there's especially amongst libertarians, there's been like this idea of having a constitutional convention. And I could not possibly be more opposed to the idea. And my reasoning is anything that would threaten those two amendments would be a death sentence to whatever freedom the Constitution may or may not be protecting right now. The real solution is at the state level, it would only take two or three states to bring the 10th Amendment all the way up to the Supreme Court and then refuse to acknowledge a loss. And it's basically calling the bluff of the federal government. If you can get the Supreme Court to deny a state's 9th and 10th Amendments, yeah, exactly. If you can get them to refuse to acknowledge a 9th and 10th Amendment, you have eliminated the need for a constitutional convention anyway, but you have also preserved those two rights. In fact, I have a sneaking suspicion, not the people advocating for it, but some of the people who might have introduced it. The reason they want to have a constitutional convention is to get rid of the 9th and 10th Amendment. But if states, and you would want to start with states where it's the easiest to do, that would be Wyoming, South Dakota, Alaska, maybe Hawaii, if you were challenging the right rulings, places where it's extremely easy to get your state to, at the legislative level, nullify a government ruling of some sort, just straight up nullify it with the 10th Amendment. And then the federal government, if they want to at least go by their own rules, would have to take that state to the Supreme Court on a 10th Amendment argument. And the other thing is it's very difficult for them to enforce their side until they get a win at the Supreme Court, okay? And one of the best places I've seen this exercised is, I think it was like 45% of the state of Oklahoma was just given back to Native people. And it was on these same grounds. And the Supreme Court ruled in favor of states' rights in this case, right? And if we can get more states' rights rulings, you can take out huge chunks of the federal government way faster than breaking up the states. And then the main one is, once you get that ball rolling, then you get state currencies back. So basically you challenge the 13th Amendment, or no, what was it? Whatever the Federal Reserve was, I don't even remember. But you challenge the Federal Reserve's legal authority with a 10th Amendment argument. This state refuses to acknowledge that the Federal Reserve has any constitutional powers granted, or this state refuses to acknowledge an income tax, and we will be arresting anyone who attempts to enforce it within our jurisdiction. Or when, or the Commerce Clause, you say the Commerce Clause insulates this state from the federal government exercising intrastate commerce within our jurisdiction, so we're going to use our 10th Amendment to nullify, I don't know, diesel exhaust fluid would be popular amongst truckers or whatever. And then you could even go after corporations that are obeying that law within the jurisdiction of your state. So you could say any truck manufacturing a non-deletable, and you could literally eliminate the EPA with the 10th Amendment argument. It would be far more effective, far cheaper, and you could start doing it now rather than take the massive risk of breaking up into smaller states, because we're already lawfully recognized as independent nation. Okay, so you don't have to break anything up.
You know, a lot of this goes along the lines of something that sort of came up with the Malay question, is that, like, someone was like, oh, you know, this is terrible, anarchists in office, you know, and he's fake. And even if he wasn't fake, it would still be terrible. And I was like, you know, in a manifested anarchy situation, because anarchy is a state of mind, right? It's the recognition of your own freedoms and the rejection of false authority. It's a state of mind first, but in a manifested anarchy society, as we progress along that path, you will 100% see more and more anarchists elected to offices to dismantle the government, or at least to dismantle the parts of the government that are doing all of the a bunch of unlawful, illegal, terrible shit. Like, you might even see the government, quote unquote, persist in the sense that it provides services in a way that evolves into being a voluntary service, as opposed to, you know, you're forced to accept certain, you know, like the police department or whatever. But manifested anarchy absolutely sees anarchists getting elected to office, and the kind of path that Alaska Anon is laying out here. Like, these things will happen as society progresses towards anarchy.
Tumen for president.
This book right here is all about the 10th Amendment. I think I got it.
It's a very good book, if nobody's read it. It's very good.
Yeah.
Please, for those of us who are blind, read the title and the author, because we can't see them.
Constitution and Owner's Manual, or just Owner's Manual. It's by Michael Meharry, I think you say his name.
Thank you.
I'll link it in the chat real quick.
I just wanted to change the topic, because I think this really annoys me. Hold on. Not to start, but this guy, who
look,
is this?
Look
this
at my guy? Reply to that, by the way.
Underclass 21, I'm looking at him. He's like a Bitcoin privacy guy. He's one of the T-Dev. He's part of the T-Dev clan. The day that Luke Parker publishes his proposal for the path towards implementing full membership proofs on Monero, this fucking idiot is posting this and, like, trying to diminish Luke, I don't know, suggesting that, I don't know what the suggestion here is, that again, Monero people aren't base. I'm not really sure what the suggestion is here, but typical Monero dev with the picture of Luke. That was from MoneroCon. Luke was trying to make a funny point. He dressed up like a maid to say that he's a servant of Monero. But these fucking Bitcoin privacy T-Dev people are just like the hypocrisy.
Find my comment on that.
Just saddens me.
Not for self-promotion.
Douglas.
Yes.
I can put one on top of that. I'm sorry.
Go for it.
I shouldn't, but I don't
know. Here's Alaska. With such a masculine Giga Chad beard, he had to quiet the masculine energy a bit as to not intimidate nerds from ETH, Zcash, BTC, etc. I have to do the same just to get Griff.
It's like how much you want to bet if it wasn't some like CGI, you know, pretend like this guy is totally the fucking secret militia of freedom or whatever. You just know that he's a total loser. You know what I'm saying? And it's like Luke Parker, like who is like king of nerds, he's just got like this full-blown masculine energy, super confident, you know. If you've ever talked to the guy in person, he just don't give a fuck, right? Like, he's just a badass. And then this guy, like, whoever the hell he is, you just know.
Douglas, sorry. I want to put one on top of that, which is you said you wanted to be in a cage with him, but I don't know the gentleman, and I don't know what all the uproar is. So I'm asking, has tea become a gender thing in America?
Has what? Tea?
Say again, slave blocker.
I'm missing the point you're making at the end there.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know who's the person. I'm just asking if tea has become a gender thing because you said you wanted to be in a cage with him. I don't know.
Oh, T-Dev. T-Dev? You're talking about T-Dev?
I'm not accusing anyone of anything, and I just want to put one on top.
Okay, I don't know if I'm following what you're saying here. But yeah, T-Dev is the samurai wallet dev. Who's just a complete utter asshole on the internet, but he has
a man, right? Or is it the gender thing, the T thing?
That's I don't know. I don't know what he is. I have no idea. I assume he's a male, and I don't know. But yeah, just wanted to point it out. Like of all, like they picked this moment to go out. Like it's just. I don't really understand it. Like they should be kissing his ass right now. What Luke has done for crypto privacy, tremendous. I mean, I'd say more so than all of the efforts of the privacy people combined.
Joins over Samurai Wallet are always accepted. That's the body said that like a couple of shows ago. I never heard that before.
Yeah. But it's known that they've been mixed, though. You can see that a coin join has happened.
What was the context again, Body? That they were always accepted and never blacklisted and stuff like that?
Yeah, one thing we've seen with Wasabi is that if you take your funds from Wasabi and put it into an exchange, or even take it from the exchange and then put it into Wasabi, you can get put on a bad boy list. You can get your funds frozen. You can get kicked off the exchange. That kind of activity, for whatever reason, hasn't happened with Samurai.
And it really depends. Like, how far back do these exchanges go? Because if they only go back a couple of hops, I mean, the fees would be stupid to do this. I mean, but you could do it. You could just send your Bitcoin from one wallet that you own to the next wallet that you own to the next wallet you own to the next wallet you own on down the list. So like 10, and now there's 10 hops between you and any tainted Bitcoin that you might have had to begin with. Mind you, you're lighter on fees, but
yeah, there might be some questions and heuristics about that. Like, do you need to change your VPN? Are you going through Tor? Are you using different wallets, right? Wallets and Bitcoin have special signatures. You can typically on a transaction tell which wallet someone is using. So there might be some caveats to that. You might have to get pretty advanced. So technically you could do it. One thing that a buddy of mine, I was chatting with, he said, yeah, you know, doing taxes or whatever, you use the crypto tax software and then you put in your addresses and it'll fill in a shitload of your own transactions that you never told them about and a whole bunch of addresses you own that you never told the tax software. And it's like, we think these are probably your transactions as well. Would you like to report them? And it's like, holy shit. Yeah, this is what chain analysis is doing. Like, so it's, you know, I mean, just to respond to you, I'd say yes and no.
Speaking of taxes, I did see an article from CoinDesk earlier this month or whatever about these are how you do your crypto taxes. And I put on Noster. I'm like, if this is not the point, if you want to do your taxes, stay in fucking fiat. You don't belong here.
I will say that Monero Talk LLC does do its taxes, for the record.
You got to have a front man, Doug.
Yeah.
With the toothy smile, you know.
Literally, if
Monero Talk LLC, very clean. It's a clean machine.
Okay. If 10,000 people just refused to pay their taxes, what would happen?
That's already the case.
If 100,000 people just refused to pay their taxes, not going to do it, what would happen?
230 million Americans did not do their taxes last year.
That reminds me of a song. We're halfway there.
Do those 100,000 people live in New Hampshire and have the Cell 411 app?
Probably, because New Hampshire's probably the first state to do something like that.
It's millions. There are hundreds of, like, literally, like, 200, 150 million people. Like 50% of people don't file taxes.
Don't do taxes? Wow.
It's a shitload of
now,
people.
Now, some of them are not lawfully, or legally, I should say, obligated to do their taxes anyway because they're under certain thresholds.
Well, right, but still.
But like, definitely not all of them. A lot of those live in Alaska and have made sure that they have the appropriate bullets for whatever equipment the IRS has recently purchased.
Why do they say that? Not gonna name any names. Why is the thing death and taxes so huge of a well-known of a saying if only 50% of people file taxes?
It's all part of that illusion I always rant about. The illusion of, like, the enslavement is almost entirely illusory. Actually, I was just talking to a farmer guy that I was trying to build into this big farm co-op yesterday about just the absolute incompetence. I know Body can speak to this. Anybody who's been in the military, the competent people usually last one contract and they leave. Unless they're prone to corruption, then some of them might stick around for, you know, moving up the chain or whatever. But if you're afraid of your government, you have not worked for them long enough. They are so unbelievably incompetent, it would blow your mind. Like, a lot of people who are, for example, I was in the Army, like, your typical soldier can't do math on a calculator, okay? Like, your typical soldier, all they care about is paying their college debt. And just remember, they were dumb enough to go to college. And usually not even for anything that, like, at least the paper might have some value. It's like, I went to college for liberal arts and I joined the military in order to pay my college debt. And I don't even like the United States.
Oh, dear
and
God.
They have absolutely no loyalty to the United States anyway. The minute the bullets start flying, they're not going to show up. And keep in mind, this is the same military that's, like, all about trans rights and whatever. And it's just like, The level of, and by the way, it is true that the United States still has the most competent military. If you think the U.S. is bad, it's so much worse. The desertion rate in China just to go into the Himalayas was like 97%. So they actually deployed to the border of India for a small incursion and had a 97% desertion rate because they didn't want to climb a hill. Okay, like, this idea that the militaries of the world, they're so funded, it's like, yeah, it's a slush fund for trying to tank Monero prices. It's like the level of competency in the militaries and police forces of the world are just jaw-droppingly incompetent. And the other thing is people say, oh, they injected $87 billion or whatever it was into tax enforcement and crypto and they just added a bunch of private police and they bought all of these guns. It's like, so what? Anybody who knows how to use a gun will tell you that it's not like you just buy guns and hand them to somebody and they're going to outshoot a trained individual. Two highly trained individuals with a decent firearm, I'm telling you, it doesn't matter how many incompetent IRS people they throw at they're feeding them to the wolves, people. Like, there's no way they are going to go out and enforce these tax policies on a large scale. They're just never going to be able to build up that level of competence.
Some epic Alaskanon rants today, I must say.
They outspend us like 1,000,000 to 1, and yet all we have to do to thwart those $87 billion of tax agents is send a Monero transaction.
Exactly. It's like a 10,000 to 1 price overhead to enforce these policies. And the other thing is like my conversion rate for like police or IRS people or tax professionals is above 50%. Like if you just talk to them like human beings and explain to them how you see what's going on, like they're not willing to stay part of like the dark side or whatever you want to call it. They hate it as much as you do. And it was the same thing that I was saying about banks. It's like most bankers hate these policies. You know, they hate the latest Basel III. They hate having to buy into bonds. They're being forced to do it, right? And the thing is the harder they push these people to comply, the faster they're going to come to our side. We just have to make sure that there are people doing the evangelism work. We have to make sure that the people developing the back end are funded, like what Luke's got going on and all that. We have to make sure that we are ready and waiting for a better system when they've had enough.
All right, guys. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. We're at the 4-hour mark, 4 hours and 7 minutes.
With no guest segment.
With no guest.
Well, I got a couple of rants, but...
You got a couple more? Jesus.
I got a couple.
I'd say maybe save it for another day, Slave Blocker.
How about just his favorite one? Just one right, really good one.
Give us your favorite one, then kind of summarize. Okay,
so I wrote this down on IRC. This is to Mr. Sir Savelnikov and to Severin Hagen. It's a conjecture. The last time I told this, it was rather emotional because I am biased because I love mining. Mining is the pursuit of knowledge. So I'm always going to be a purist of proof of work. And so let's consider that the people that are here on this chat right now, we all have digital assets. And these digital assets, like I'm considering that in the universe where we live, we just have one timeline. So under this timeline, we have all digital assets, and we find these digital assets, like Douglas is the first, then is Laskanon, and then Body. And we also find these assets. We want to submit them to the blockchain. And just for the sake of simplicity, these intervals are exactly the block times. So the conjecture that I say is that there is no signing mechanism between N nodes that enforces a block time as good as proof of work. And that is a subtle argument, because the first argument is that there is no cost for mining the block. And I don't even know how it works, if they propagate the block itself or they find it through torrent or they do whatever. They meaning the staking algorithm. Yes, so that's the argument. There is no cost first, so where's the price? And the second argument is that I want to submit transactions to buckets of time. I don't want the transactions to make up a subjective time block. You know, that's my rant.
Thanks. All right. That opens up a big can of worms when we start talking about proof of work versus proof of stake.
Don't worry, yeah, I'll shut up.
Appreciate your thoughts. We had a fantastic Monerotopia panel on that subject, but I know you're bringing it up because we had Andre on Monero Talk, and he was talking about how they upgraded Xano with the private proof of stake, and he has made the claim he believes that Monero will one day be proof of stake.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Here we go.
He explains it does make sense, but let's not go there.
Open that. We'll save that, guys. You have to attend Monerotope if you want to hear that discussion. We'll save that for in
and
person.
Anybody who didn't watch the two shows, you've got to watch those two shows. They are amazing.
Before we descend into chaos, prove
that conjecture. And if you are trying to make a centralized version of making the pre-images somehow, if you're making proof of work, the argument will be if it is a hybrid system that you create the buckets of time with proof of work and then you better it, because the argument is 10 blocks times 0.6, even if I have 51% of the hash rate, I'm going to say this is a golden goose. I'm not going to destroy it. I want 6 million Moneros. And what about your cousin? Did she turn 21 yet? You know what I mean? Proof of work is the thing. There must be a cost to stuff, or else there's no point to it.
No, my instinct is to agree with you. But just don't shoot the messenger, right? I'm just telling you what Andre said.
Yeah, I think Monero will be always proof of work.
What? I didn't hear. What?
I just said my instinct is to agree with you that proof of work is needed fundamentally. Tux, let's take it away. Let's close the curtain.
All right, guys.
Thank you again. Thank you so much, everybody. We do these shows every weekend, every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Monerotopia episode. We stream live shows every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. You can find and subscribe to our show on YouTube and Odyssey, or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter or join us in the Monerotopia Telegram group. See you all next.